Thanks for listening to WRIF Online. The live web stream will begin in 15 seconds.
Hi, this is Doug Podell. Thanks for listening to WRIF Online. Don't forget, while you're online, to check out the Riff Concert page. It's the Motor City's best for complete rock concert information. For more details, just click on the Riff banner on your Windows Media Player.
Self-employed, contract, part-time, or looking for better coverage? You need to call me. I have plans that can get you covered now. What's more, I can save you money. Look, I work for you, not some mega conglomerate. Give me a call, Mike Kay, the health insurance giant, at 866-91-GIANT. That's 866-91-GIANT. And never have to deal with this again.
Good morning, Big Box Insurance Company.
Life is good when you're covered with a health insurance giant. Call today, 866-91-GIANT, or online at healthinsurancegiant.com.
All right, so if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. That's right, all statistics show that ignorance is not bliss, it's brutal. If you were to look at the average income level of all Americans, it's directly related to their amount of formal education. Bottom line, if you're not educated, the odds are stacked up against you. The amazing thing about this phenomenon is everyone's perception of the high cost of education. Think about it for a sec. Is it easier for you to A, justify spending $25,000 on a new car that's worth practically nothing in 5 years, or B, invest that money in yourself and get a more rewarding job making more money over the next 25 years? They hope you answered B. The point is, if you're not happy with your current job or income level, you need to do something about it. While this program may not be for everyone, they believe it's something you should at least consider. Microsoft, through its IT Academy, has partnered with ComputerTraining.com in a mission to build a better educated America. Begin your journey today by logging on to ComputerTraining.com and taking the online skills challenge. Again, that's ComputerTraining.com and take the online skills challenge. ComputerTraining.com, helping you build a better tomorrow today.
Comcast Radio!
Tonight on When Phone Bills Attack, Mark Wolf dares to share his story.
So I'm looking at my home phone bill when suddenly it dawns on me that I'm paying too much.
Traumatized, Mark calls out for help.
I call Comcast Digital Voice. They give me better phone service for less. Unlimited local and long distance, 12 calling features, even the ability to check my voicemail online.
Stay tuned for more shockingly graphic reenactments. When Phone Bills Attack returns.
That's Comcastic Radio, and now for the Skiddly Diddly.
Get Comcast Digital Voice for as low as $33 a month for 1 year. You'll get unlimited local and long distance plus voicemail. Just call 1-888-COMCAST. Offer ends 9/30/06. Comcast Digital Voice, digital cable and high-speed internet available for $33 per month each when you subscribe to all three for 1 year. Limited to new customers. Not available in all areas. After promotional period, regular rates apply. Activation and equipment fees may apply, and prices not include applicable taxes and fees. Savings based on multiple product rate versus standard rate. Other restrictions apply.
Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome to the broadcast. That's right, number 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. It'll be good for the next 2 hours as we take your calls on events of the day, whatever. Night Call brought to you this hour by Waking Up, Metro Detroit sweatshop free clothing store located in the Universal Mall at 12 Mile Road in DeQuinder in Warren, or at wakingupstore.com. I suppose I should say and wakingupstore.com. Thank you to Mike and Denise Kitchen, the proprietors of the Waking Up store, for the expo they put on yesterday, Saturday, September 16th, out at the Universal Mall. I spoke out there along with a number of other people. There were exhibitors as well, and gives an idea of the kind of activity that can be carried out when people set their mind to it. And Mike and Denise certainly have their mind set on bringing clothing that is sweatshop free. I said, one of the things I said in my talk there, how unusual it is that a store has to advertise that it has sweatshop free clothing. So we know where the rest of the stuff comes from that we're wearing, including, I'm sure, what I've got on my back right now. But you can go out to the Waking Up store and get sweatshop-free clothing, lots of good books, other stuff as well. Free trade coffee and chocolate magazines, Fifth Estate newspaper, for those of you who remember it, and still publishing after all these years. But again, thanks so much for all of that. There's something in my brain that I want to say about that, but I can't pull it out right now. Well, there's elections coming out. I was just I was listening to my, like, 90 seconds of right-wing talk radio about all I can stand. And the host, and I won't even give them any publicity. They don't need it. They dominate everywhere, right? Which is, all right, I'm trying, I've made a six-month, or where is this in the year, nine-month resolution. I'm not going to get off on tangents. All right. So this right-wing talk show host was crowing that the Social Democratic Party of Sweden has lost the election, and they've been in power for 10 or 12 years, I think all by themselves, and their worst showing in 71 years, so he was ecstatic about it. The only thing that happens, though, in countries that have a lot of social programs, they're not here like Bushko. That are trying to unravel just the bare safety nets that we have, things like Social Security and protection of health and safety regulations, environmental regulations, protection of the environment. I mean, that's what Bushko is doing. Even these right-wingers that have got in, like in Canada, Stephen Harper and what have you, they're not going to touch the social programs. I mean, they're trying to bankrupt some of them, like their health program, by shifting money to a military that they don't even need. Ultimately, they have to accept the kind of social programs that people in most industrialized countries take for granted, and the same in Sweden. Not quite sure, other than people just get tired of being ruled by the same government over and over again, and that was one of the longest ruling parties in Europe. But this right-wing host was quite happy, not really realizing that same process is going to go on here in November. That they're going to kick all of the current guys out. We've had about 12 years of them, and the kind of corruption and arrogance and stupidity and incompetence has just become too much for most of us to tolerate. But one good thing already has occurred. Apparently, Bushko has spoken to their oil buddies that they sat by and watched them gouges at the pump for how many years, and they said, hey, if we go into these elections with gas over $3, forget it. You're going to get a party in there, the Democratic Party, that might just give you a little bit of a hard time. It's not like they're going to give it a real hard time, but a little bit of a hard time, because there are people in the Democratic Party that said there should be excessive profits tax and the like. And certainly those oil companies have been making excessive profits off of you and me. So I was just going to tell you that gasoline, lowest I've seen, is at my local Citgo station, $2.24. And our producer, Jay Hudson, said $2.20. I can't remember where he said, like downriver somewhere. The $1.85 in Missouri. $1.85 in Missouri. This is very interesting. I just saw what the first caller wants to talk about. I was going to say something positive, but now I'm not. I'm going to say all negative stuff. And John, you hold on and you can ask me your question, and then I will I'll answer it in the way I actually had intended. So this is a scam, and I'm sure Bushko just kind of said, yeah, well, I mean, where'd all this oil come from all of a sudden? That they can knock the price down by a buck. Remember the Ford executive who said that they were taking it for granted? I read that a few weeks ago. That they were taking it for granted gasoline was going to permanently be over, was going to be between $3 and $4 a gallon. So everybody stopped buying Ford trucks and Hummers going out of business and all of that. And suddenly it's out of the stratosphere. Still higher than it has to be. Where it's pumped in a lot of these countries, like in Venezuela, gasoline is like 14, 15 cents a gallon. So a good portion of it is profit. And by the way, for whatever you may think, I think I've said this any number of times, whatever you may think of the president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, almost all the profits of Citgo Gas, which the Venezuelan government owned, go to the poor of Venezuela. Now, a lot of other social programs as well throughout the Caribbean, and they've even helped with some of that money, help poor people here in the United States. They don't have stockholders. They don't have stockholders at Citgo, so you're not sending, when you start paying either 2 1/4 a gallon or 3 1/4 a gallon, it's not going up to some rich stockholder. It's going to people like you and me. So you can argue forever about Chavez, which he's nowhere near as bad as Bush says, but even still, the money, that's what I'm concerned about, where it goes, where it winds up. Well, the looks like the Republicans about to get their ass kicked in November, and deservedly so, but Bush has begun to try to play this terror card, right? All of a sudden he starts producing all of these terrorists, and he starts this big argument about how, you know, how they can be tortured and how they can be tried. A while ago, he never even said the name Osama bin Laden. You've heard me, if you've listened to the broadcast, you've heard me any number of times refer to him as Osama bin Forgotten, because it was just a little while ago that he told the press, Bush did, that he didn't know where bin Laden was and, quote, didn't think about him much. Suddenly now he thinks about him all the time and talks about him all the time. Well, you just can't fool people all the time. Again, my favorite Lincoln dictum, you just can't fool all the people all the time. And the only ones left being fooled are some of the people that can be fooled all the time. And no matter what happened, they would still be these supporters of these evil incompetents. So how are they going to pull the election out? Even the terror card is not working. What in the hell are they going to do? Well, I wish I thought of some of these things on my own, but that's why I look at these particular websites. And a good one is BuzzFlash.com. And here in, I'm looking for a date. I don't see it real quickly. Oh, yeah. September 15th. Yeah. Was it Friday or something like that? Is Osama in the green room? Green room is where you stay before you go on stage, awaiting a dramatic pre-election capture. Now, they call that the October surprise. Reagan did that in 1980. They had cut this secret deal with the Iranians. Remember, the Iranians were holding American hostages and all of that? Well, so something like that. They were already negotiating with them and agreed to send them guns and all that. That was the Iran-Contra scandal. So you had these Republicans that were in bed with the Iranians who had just captured and held captive for, what was it, 400 and something days. But here's what this says real quickly. Speculation abounds that the Pakistan peace agreement, Pakistan made this agreement with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda on the Afghan border, but according to BuzzFlash, that perhaps it's really a way to trap Democrats into blaming Bush for not capturing Osama and then producing him the week before the election. Could they be that evil, that vile, that crass, that opportunistic? You answer that. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Now, during the 2004 election, BuzzFlash says, there was the same speculation that Bush's Islamic alter ego might be awaiting capture in one of the CIA holding tanks in Eastern Europe. All the Bush administration could produce, however, was a bin Laden tape video that not surprisingly aided Bush in his, quote, reelection efforts. Because Bush and Osama need each other to galvanize their constituencies. Thought being that Osama bin Laden purposely produced this video right before the election in 2004 to anger the population, to make people think that Bush was their only salvation. And it probably didn't move a tremendous number of people, but enough to at least put Bush within cheating distance so they could steal the election from John Kerry. What? Why in the world? Because Bush is so tough and he wants war and all of that. Bush plays right into the Osama hands, and of course Osama aids Bush. That's why they say they're their alter egos. Let me see. On the cultural front, big Roger Waters from Pink Floyd concert tour coming to North America. Beginning in New York City, they have a flying pig, you know that, from pigs, and urging Democratic votes in the elections. Big photograph of this pig. You go to my website, Peter Werbe, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E, W-E-R-B-E.com. And remember that, if you will, because there's some free tickets there for you as well. But it says on it, don't be led to the slaughter. Vote Democratic, November 2nd. And also, impeach Bush, written on the rear of the pig floating over the audience. And he compares in the performance at Jones Beach. There's pictures of Karl Rove, Bush, Ronald Reagan, Margaret Thatcher, and with pictures of Osama bin Laden, Mao Zedong, Stalin, and other world tyrants. Roger Waters asked whether, quote, these people are really our enemies, being the Arab people, or meaning these folks. This took place during his anti-Bush Blair song, Leaving Beirut, in which he claimed that Texas education must have really effed you up, and asked why Tony Blair, the U.S. poodle pawn, is such a warmonger. All right, one of the things, if you go to my website, you can get tickets to this new documentary called Jesus Camp. And I'm going to, next week on Sunday night and Sunday morning, I'm going to be interviewing Heidi Ewing, who's one of the producers. And it's about these children who are brought to this evangelical Jesus camp by this minister to youth minister. And it's an extraordinarily disturbing film. It's extraordinarily disturbing. Although, interestingly, there's not a narrative. There's a little bit of a narrative by Mike Papantonio, who's an Air America host with Robert Kennedy Jr. on Ring of Fire. But most of it, I would think these evangelicals would say, cool, yeah, that's us. We're willing to do this. We're willing to show our kids talking in tongues and reducing hundreds of them to tears with this religious fervor. But we're going to be having a little random drawing for 50 free tickets, because it's going to be shown as in Detroit, the premiere, Wednesday, September 27th at 7:30 at the Main Theater in downtown Royal Oak, Left Mile and Main. And you can go to my site, and there are free tickets there. So, again, Peter Werbe, PeterWerbe.com. So I don't know how many people. We're going to give away 50 tickets. Maybe only 48 of you will go there. Hope it's a lot more than that. But, well, yes and no. I'd like everyone to have a ticket, so maybe we can keep it down. Also, the Detroit teachers strike. Any thoughts on that? I'd like to hear from you. Ford, you... I was just looking at the Detroit Free Press from Saturday, and the headline, Far Enough? Ford's New Way Forward. Wall Street's his latest strategy isn't enough. And they're talking about getting rid of 44,000 jobs and closing more plants. What in the hell does that do to people's lives everywhere that it's happening? The plants aren't, one in Ontario and one in Ohio, is it? I can't remember. But the idea that these companies are so screwed up, whereas these Japanese and Korean manufacturers know how to do it, can pay decent wages, are expanding production. What's going on here? I think that's really, really the question. What's going on here? Oh, yeah. Just one more cultural note. I was listening to this program interview with Bob Seger. Has a brand new CD out called Face the Promise. A lot of it kind of country-ish. But he has this one song in there called No More. This strong anti-war song. And he was talking about it and comparing it to Vietnam. Man, this is some small type for me. Tomorrow is the price for yesterday. He always can turn a phrase. A billion waves won't wash the truth away. Someday you'll be ordered to explain. No one gets to walk between the rain. He doesn't want any more of this. And on the program, he came up with a strong anti-war statement. So the majority of the population is opposed to the war. The majority of the population thinks that Bush is doing a terrible job. The majority of the population knows that everything that Bush said about the war was a lie. That the majority of people support Social Security as it is. Why is there even a doubt of what's going to happen? Well, we shall see. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743, my website, peterwerbe.com, it's where the tickets are, W-E-R-B-E, and email, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Let's go to our phones, and here's John in Westland. John, what's happening? Hey, John. Well, wait a minute. I'm doing something wrong. John, sorry. Go ahead. Now you're on the air. My fault.
Hey, Mr. Werby. Hello.
Yeah, hey.
Hey, just real quick. What did Bob Seger say?
What?
He said Bob Seger made a serious political statement. What did he say?
Well, he said the song's called No No More, and it's about the Iraq War.
Okay, I misunderstood you.
Yeah.
Hey, I was just wondering, how come usually the last few times I listen to you a lot, and I don't agree with everything you say, but I still listen, you know what I mean?
I appreciate it.
You know, unfortunately, I did vote for Bush, and I sort of regret it, but there are some positive things coming out of this stuff, isn't there?
Name two.
Name two?
Yeah. I don't mean to put you on the spot, John, but go ahead. Name two.
I don't know. There isn't planes crashing into buildings no more, but that had nothing to do with Iraq or nothing like that. But
right.
You know what I mean? We have military for war. I mean, you're going to be at war somewhere. It don't matter where we are. That's just the war is the big Bush code business, right?
Yeah. That doesn't sound like the positive thing. But
no,
it sounds
no.
Like
I mean, I agree with all the negative things that you say. I just want to hear something positive
okay.
Every now and then, man.
All right. I should say I'm particularly mellow tonight because one of my colleagues here at the station gave me this tea called Calming Tea. So, and she says that also the same thing that you're saying, John, is
right.
That it's tremendously easy to be negative about Bush because there's so many negative things. And actually, we probably are to the point where there's so many people in opposition. When are we going to start putting forth not just criticism, but a positive
right.
Vision and positive view for the future?
And a solution.
And what?
And a solution.
Oh, a solution. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just said revolution.
No, no. I think he would be doing a lot better job if he wasn't catching hell all the way around. You know, it seems like he's.
No, it's the other way. He's doing. Wait a minute. He's doing such a piss poor. No, John. Yeah, no. He's doing such a piss poor job. That's why everybody's opposed him. But do me a favor. Hang up, and I will say some positive things. Not about Bush, but I will say some very positive. So thank you for taking me to task on that. I agree. Thank you. All right. What we have to do is look at this country. I mean, one of the important reasons for criticism is that it gives you an idea of what is what the negation. All right. What do we want to get rid of? What's wrong? What's negative? What do we want to get? All right. So we see that. So what's positive? I mean, right now, the Democratic Party does not have much of a positive vision. It, like all big ruling parties, you can look particularly, well, whether it's in Europe or Latin America, places like that, they kind of switch. And the problem with the Republicans here, not only do they want to grab power forever, but they also want to fundamentally alter the nature of this government. They want to get rid of all the social safety nets, and you know, ours are the weakest in the industrialized world, and they want to have a unitary president that is not bound by what is in the Constitution, checks and balances. All right, there you go, Pete, you're being negative again. So, but the Democrats, with the exception of a few, want to just take back the government. And they're not going to be as awful, as terrible, as corrupt, and as incompetent as Bushko has been. Because it's built in. Incompetence is built in. Corruption is built in. All of that is built in. Lies are built in. Empire is built in. All of that is. So we want to get rid of that. But what we have to push the Democrats to do, or another party, is to have a positive vision of what's possible in the world. First off, we have to make peace. And this is a long discussion. I don't know if I even want to go off on it. You can say, are you going to make peace with Al-Qaeda? Are you going to make peace with Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran? Are you going to make peace with Kim Jong-il and North Korea and those people? Well, things may have been, are maybe so totally screwed up that none of this is possible. These people may have ruined everything, any potential for peace and justice. But let's take it for granted that it's not. And think that we could use economic clout, military power, not use it like in wars, but not the threat of it either, but the willingness to not project it around the world in the way the United States has done for the last 100 years. In the last 100 years, I can't remember exactly, but the United States has invaded and occupied 100 different countries. It's invaded and occupied countries 100 different times, because sometimes we went back into countries like Nicaragua. and a lot of this in the first half of the 20th century, but, you know, second half as well, and into this period also. So, I mean, right now, United States troops have invaded and are occupying two Muslim countries across the world. And argue as you may whether this is justified or necessary or whatever, most of us agree that Iraq has been a total catastrophe, a total disaster, with no end in sight and no idea how to solve it. The majority of the Muslim population, the vast majority, sees this Western nation 6,000 miles from its borders in Iraq, and was it 8,000 in Afghanistan, occupying, having invaded and occupying and destroying parts of a Muslim nation. So there are ways that you could begin to promise to withdraw force that could make the possibility of peace real. There has to be nuclear disarmament as well with Russia. And talking about cutting and running? No, we're talking about making a world safe. Right now, Bush Co. is making the world more dangerous. We have to stop supplying the world with arms. The United States is the leading supplier of arms. People getting killed, you see, all over the world, people are killing one another. They're killing each other a lot with American weapons that we're producing here and giving countries like $1 billion, like Israel and all that, and then they buy the weapons back. Well, stop making war. All right. That then frees up hundreds of billions of dollars. Like the war budget could be cut initially in half, and nothing would happen to us. The waste, how huge it is, the bases we have everywhere, absolutely unnecessary. So we could begin to create, but that's too tentative. We could create a national health program and take the tens of millions of people in this country that have no health insurance and the tens of millions of more of them that have really terrible health insurance and guarantee them what everyone in the middle class and above expect, which is only about 35% of the population. So the other two, so we don't start looking like Guatemala. We could make a minimum wage that that wasn't a disgrace. We could have free university education. I mean, high school is free. Why isn't college free? Everybody says you have to have a college education. So why are we charging people $40,000 and $50,000? Why are schools so bad and so bankrupt that we have to try to take it out of teachers' salaries? That there's so many kids in classes, they don't have proper textbooks and all of that. Because it's all going to the military. It's all going to these corrupt sources that that don't support what we as individual citizens need in our communities. So that's very positive. And raise Social Security. I'm sure you can think of positive things as well. I'm just sort of rambling these off the top of my head. We could begin a public works project that would some of you, I'm sure, have been in European countries, northern tier European countries, where there's just ferry systems and these huge bridges and stuff like that. That the quality of life is one that is admirable rather than a disgrace. The richest country in the world and the highest poverty level. We could end that as well. Positive enough for you? You tell me. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Peter Werbe here with you. And here's John in Detroit. Hi, John. You're on the air.
How you doing tonight, Peter?
Doing excellent. Thank you.
I try to buy Sicko gas whenever I can. But my comment, I actually had some positive thing to say that by Halloween, gas is going to be like $2 a gallon.
That could be.
It'll be just in time for the election, you know.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't think the Republicans are going to get their asses kicked as much as everybody thinks they are, because gas is going to be cheap again, and a lot of people get fooled by that. And
I don't know. I wonder. Here, Tom just sent me an email. calltalkyes@yahoo.com. That famous, I don't know if you ever saw that. It's off a video. It was Bush giving the finger to the camera. And he's, Tom says, I saw gas at Speedway Station I-94 in Rawsonville, 208. There's an urban myth that Bush does not want to catch Bin Laden. Yeah. He said, here's his flyer. Gas prices are coming down because the election is coming up. Don't be conned by the petro-fascist. Restore balance to Congress. So you think people are can be fooled, right? That they will get fooled again.
Well, you know, Peter, you said on your show before that the average IQ in Mississippi was 85.
I didn't say that.
Yes, you did. You read some statistics from a poll that said they ranked all the states in order by IQ, and out of the top 10, 7 of those voted Democratic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all the bottom 25 or 26 except for one voted Republican, and at the bottom of the list was Mississippi, and the average IQ was 85, so...
Well, you got me there. I think you're actually right. There was this correlation between all of that. But I don't know. I can just hear the strains of the Who singing Won't Get Fooled Again. Well, we shall see, won't we? But maybe I just have this foolish confidence in people. I mean, at times it does appear to be misplaced. All right, thank you very much, and we will be right back.
This is Night Call. On 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Tired of shopping for clothes from companies that use sweatshop labor to produce them? Well, check out the Waking Up store at the Universal Mall in Warren. Waking Up stocks sweatshop-free clothing for men and women and carries U.S.-made and union-made jeans and shirts. Yes, real American-made blue jeans. They also carry clothes made from eco-fabrics such as organic cotton and hemp. They require no pesticides or insecticides to grow, and hemp resists mildew and bacteria and is more durable and breathable than cotton. All of Waking Up's eco-fiber vendors are Co-op America approved, which means they've gone through Co-op America's screening process and are clean, green, and sweatshop free. Waking Up carries free trade coffee, chocolate, and accessories. They also have a media section with books and magazines and a community bulletin board. So check out Waking Up at the Universal Mall in Warren on 12 Mile in DeQuinder or visit their website at WakingUpStore.com. They're waking up. Are you?
Comcastic Radio!
Tonight on When Phone Bills Attack, Mark Wolf dares to share his story.
So I'm looking at my home phone bill when suddenly... dawns on me that I'm paying too much.
Traumatized, Mark calls out for help.
I call Comcast Digital Voice. They give me better phone service for less. Unlimited local and long distance, 12 calling features, even the ability to check my voicemail online.
Stay tuned for more shockingly graphic reenactments. When Phone Bills Attack returns.
That's Comcastic Radio, and now for the Skiddly Diddly.
Get Comcast Digital Voice for as low as $33 a month for 1 year. You'll get unlimited local and long distance plus voicemail. Just call 1-888-COMCAST. Offer ends 9/30/06. Comcast Digital Voice, digital cable, and high-speed internet available for $33 per month each when you subscribe to all three for 1 year. Limited to new customers. Not available in all areas. After promotional period, regular rates apply. Activation and equipment fees may apply, and price does not include applicable taxes and fees. Savings based on multiple product rate versus standard rate. Other restrictions apply.
If you have allergies and sinus congestion and you haven't been taking Benadryl allergy sinus headache, I'm guessing you don't feel much better. Now, I'm not a doctor, but Benadryl is the histamine blocker with the active ingredient proven more effective than the leading allergy medicine at relieving allergy symptoms. Plus, a decongestant and pain reliever combination for your sinus pressure and headache they don't have. And I knew you'd want to be taking the right stuff. Benadryl allergy sinus headache, the right medicine for allergies and sinus pain.
Use as directed based on Benadryl allergy 50 milligrams 3 times daily. Don't exceed maximum dose of 2 pills.
Nicorette presents Win the Battle. Steve Callahan's ship sank and he was adrift in the Atlantic on a 5.5-foot raft. Armed with a survival kit, he distilled water by the spoonful. He fought off sharks with a spear and survived 76 days alone at sea. Stay strong, and Nicorette can help you beat smoking. Win the battle, one craving at a time, with Nicorette. Use as directed. Individual results may vary. Support programs can improve success rate.
My name's Dan Deitch. I'm a self-employed machinist, and I needed to get some insurance. I was waiting for another company, and they were just dragging their feet.
Then Dan heard about Health Insurance Giant.
Heard the ad on the radio, and I thought about calling. I was too busy to call, and I forgot about it. And then another week went by, and I heard the ad again, and I thought, you know what? I stopped right what I was doing, and I called.
Dan made the call to Mike Kay at 866-91-GIANT.
I described to him over the phone what I was looking for, and when he brought it, he took down the information. I don't think he took any more than 20, 25 minutes of my time. He called to follow up, and everything was already in place by lunchtime. I never had to call him after the first phone call. To me, that sets him apart right there.
Hello, I'm Mike Kay. Health Insurance Giant has helped thousands of people over the past 11 years. In addition to small businesses, we can help find insurance for families, people who are self-employed, uninsured, or anyone paying too much for COBRA or medical insurance. Give me a call at 866-91-GIANT. We'll get you quality health insurance at the best price possible. Let me customize a health insurance plan for you.
Chickenpox,
meningitis, and hepatitis B.
Polio, pertussis,
better known as whooping cough.
There are many diseases that have afflicted millions of people,
but are safely prevented today thanks to immunizations.
It's important to keep your children up to date with their shots.
And if you're an older adult, you must get your shots, like flu and pneumonia.
Immunizations are a childhood habit worth keeping.
Talk to your health care provider to be sure that your immunizations are up to date.
And that your kids have had all their shots, too.
Brought to you by the Michigan Department of Community Health and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters.
Is this where we go to join the carnival?
Yeah, but your burritos.
We're the incredible half-pound burritos from Taco Bell's Big Bell Value Menu. Remarkably filling, gigantic in value.
I don't know. Burritos as a carnival attraction?
Not one, not two, but three half-pound burritos.
And on a value menu.
We ask those who are weak of heart to reconsider viewing these astounding half-pound burritos.
Astounding?
The incredible size of these half-pound burritos is only made more unbelievable by the unthinkably low price.
The value is a thing of wonder.
Get full from Taco Bell's Big Bell Value Menu. Fill up on any of three hefty half-pound burritos to keep your stomach and your wallet full. Think outside the bun.
At participating locations, half-pound claim based on average weight. Product weights necessarily vary.
Got a taste for something crunchy, spicy, melty, or grilled? Then head to Taco Bell and experience Fourth Meal, the late-night meal between dinner and breakfast. For exciting late-night taste, think outside the bun. Taco Bell is open till 2 a.m. or later. Hours may vary by location.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. It's interesting when callers remember things that I said better than I do, because he's absolutely right. The one, the caller that called in and was saying that I had said that people in Mississippi had an average IQ of 85. And Gaia bless those of us who don't have as high intelligence, and we should treat them with the utmost respect and dignity. They shouldn't be made fun of. There should be a place in the economy. All of that. 85 isn't bad either. But there is this correlation, and this is on my website. If you go to peterwerby.com, I'm saying that a lot tonight. One thing you can find out about the free tickets to the Jesus Camp movie. So it's Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com. Go down the right side, and it will say Fooled Again. And it's his book by Greg Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T. And when you go to that site, just keep going down. You come to this this guy. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe it's this guy that's saying. Actually, I can't get it back on my screen. But it's someone who's that's misspelled morons. He's calling the liberals morons, and he's misspelled it. But anyway, there is a correlation between who voted for Kerry and who voted for Bush. Now, the first out of the 21 states. Unfortunately, Michigan is the 21st state of the first of the top 21 states with IQ, average IQ. 18 of them voted for Kerry, including Michigan. The only ones that went for Bush were number 17. So the first 16 states, highest one with IQ, 113 average IQ, voted for Kerry. And then down through Maine, 16th, and then 17th is Virginia. And you got all these government hacks that live out there in the suburbs. And then Wisconsin for Kerry. Then Colorado and Iowa that went for Bush, Iowa, I think, narrowly. And then Michigan. And then you start going downhill, and then it's completely red all the way down from 25 to 50. And there at the bottom, Mississippi, average IQ, 85. So it's about 30 points underneath the top blue state. They went for Kerry, Connecticut, but 113. Does that tell us anything? Well, maybe. All right, let's go on. This isn't our same caller. This is not the same John from Westland, is it?
How are you doing?
This is a different John?
Yes, this is a different John. This is a John A. from Westland.
Okay, go ahead. You're on the air.
I really enjoy the subjects you're putting out, the information you're talking about. My question to you tonight is, what's going on with the Pope and the comments about Muslim or Islam?
Well, he said he apologized. Doesn't this give credence to everything that they say, the Muslims that were crusaders? And here he's bringing up this stuff, the Pope, who was in the Nazi youth in the 30s and the 40s making these derogatory remarks about Islam. But here is his I thought I had a better one than this. He said, "Now you know I wanted the whole quote because essentially he said that he was sorry that about the reaction that people had. He was deeply sorry his remarks on Islam and violence offended Muslims. He didn't say he was sorry. He said it. It's like I insult you and I say, well, I'm sorry you got angry. Well, it's, I don't know. Is that an apology or not?
I guess so.
I mean, I'm not sorry I said it. I'm sorry you got mad.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. You know, I called you something pretty awful, John, but I'm not sorry I said it. I'm sorry you got mad. I think there's a difference.
Yeah, one more quick question for you. How is it it's great that the gas prices have taken a tumble. What caused that?
What do you think?
Well, it's close election time.
Yeah, I think everybody thinks that. So, if I had a memory that I'd remember the name of the caller who said it, but he thinks that's going to fool people and people are going to forget everything else and think, oh, things aren't so bad just because gas has gone down a dollar. But I haven't heard anyone anywhere, including, I kind of bring this up when I'm pumping gas with other people, and I say, well, the gas is going down finally, and uniformly everyone says at the gas pump, well, yeah, the election's around the corner. So I don't think we can get fooled again. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Let's go on to Ralph in Ontario. Where are you at, Ralph, in Ontario?
No, it's Rob, Peter.
Rob. Okay, yeah. I got Ralph up here, but...
that's okay.
Where are you? We're in Ontario.
Oh, Windsor, right across the border from you.
I've heard of that town. Go ahead.
Yeah, I bet you have. Listen, I heard you made a comment about Stephen Harper there, and I don't know, like, we've had socialist policies here in Canada way too long, like 13 years of a Liberal government, and it's just been brutal. I mean, hospital wait times of 8-9 hours to get into an emergency ward, and people going in for Band-Aids, and, you know, you think socialism is such a great thing, I'll tell you, you really should come over here and try it on our side.
Well, most of the Canadians I know are pretty happy with their medical system, but there does increasingly have problems, and I know that the head of the Canadian Medical Association illegally has formed a private hospital. So what that essentially will mean is that those that can afford it can get excellent medical care. And underfunded. That's the problem. It's underfunded. So you've got your choice there, Ralph. One thing, Canada's a capitalist nation. At the last I checked, Montreal and Toronto are big centers of finance and business and what have you. The fact that Canada, like other decent industrialized countries, has a medical program financed by the government. We're the only one here in the United States that doesn't. And I'll tell you, the people without health insurance in this country, the people with underfunded health insurance in this country that they have to pay through the nose for still, would kill for the kind of health care that you and your family get as just a matter of, as a right of being a citizen. But I said the other week, you guys don't need an army. You shouldn't have an army. You should have a police force the way Costa Rica does. And you have two choices right now. You can either have a good medical health plan and care and not have the kind of weights and not have the kind of problems, or you can have Harper spend more and more billions of dollars on a army and air force and navy that you have no need for. The United States will take care of you. Don't worry.
I wouldn't totally agree with that. I think we have to be more solid with our U.S. neighbors, and I think building up our military to protect us. Let's not forget.
Wait. There's only one country in the world that is going to attack you. It's called the United States of America. The United States of America has invasion and occupation plans on the books, or I guess now in the computer, in Washington, D.C., like it has an invasion and occupation plan for every single country in the world. And so you couldn't stand up to the United States Army or Armed Forces, although I don't know, a bunch of irregulars are in Iraq. So you're wasting your money. You are been sucked into the military-industrial complex that has caused the United States, which per capita, or I don't even know if per capita is right, but has overwhelming wealth, and yet they have a poverty rate. We have a poverty rate that is way beyond Canada, and it's because we waste all of our money spending it on our military. And Stephen Harper, who I'm sure is going to be kicked out soon, although I got to admit, you know, the Liberal government had enough problems that you can understand why Canadians were upset.
Oh, Peter, it was scandal after scandal after scandal. So when you talk about liberalism or socialism, I've seen it. I'm 40 years old or better, and, you know, I've seen it so many years over here. I was just so happy to get a conservative government in. And actually, every time there's been a conservative government in power in Canada, I've found myself things have been much better, and we have good relations with our U.S. neighbors, and to me, that's very important.
Well, maybe so. Let's get some more Canadians weighing in on this. Thanks a lot, Rob. I appreciate it. In fact, let's ask Will. Will is calling from Ontario as well. What city, Will?
I'm in Windsor as well, Peter.
Okay.
Actually going to address another comment you made earlier, but I'll just follow up on your caller you just had, Rob.
Sure.
I would disagree with him. His negative statement regarding health care, waiting in the emergency rooms, has been a problem. It's been alleviated to some degree. But all in all, our healthcare system is very good. Any operation, no matter how intricate, no matter how expensive, is denied no one. And if the injury or the disease is severe enough or life-threatening, they are immediately taken, at least from Windsor, immediately flown to London, and surgery is performed. For those that have non-threatening life disabilities, or just minor headaches, cuts and bruises, there is a long wait in hospitals. But they do get treatment, and it is good treatment.
Well, so. And as like I said, it's mostly a lack of money, and it's how is it going to be allocated? You know, Michael Moore was up at the Toronto Film Festival, and
right.
He showed sections of his new film called Sicko, which includes segments that compare Canada's public health care to the privatized system in the United States. And let me see here. The segments presented at the Toronto Film Festival had stories of personal health nightmares, including that of a woman in the U.S. denied payment for an ambulance ride after a head-on collision because it was not pre-approved. Michael Moore told the Pac Theater in Toronto, they try to find every way they can to deny it to you or not sell it to you, or they try to find any way they can not to pay the bill. So as far as I know about the Canadian system, whatever weaknesses that it has, its goal is to try to deliver as much health care as possible, where it's the exact opposite in the United States, unless you have a well-funded health insurance plan, which we know that tens of millions of people have none, tens of millions of people have really terrible ones.
Yeah, and you interpret that correctly. But however, just getting back to an earlier comment you made regarding the 2004 presidential election, when bin Laden released that tape 5 days or 6 days prior to the election, right then, all political analysts that I read, non-American political analysts, immediately identified that as an intent by bin Laden to get the American people to vote for George Bush because he's just such a godsend to the jihadist cause.
Sure.
And one more point I wanted to make, and I know this may disappoint you, but I also concur with the earlier American callers that George Bush, I think the Republicans may lose a few seats, but as much as it pains me, I think they're going to do it again. I think George Bush will be successful in terrifying the American people again and holding on to both houses of Congress. I hope I'm wrong, but I could have sworn in 2004 there was no way he could have been reelected. But after looking at the stats and seeing how the American people voted, I think he could do it again, regardless of how incompetent he's been over these last 2 years.
Well, Will, if you get a chance, I'm really promoting my website tonight. Go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com, and go to the Fooled Again site and look at the way that, in fact, the election was stolen in Ohio. It was stolen in 2000 in Florida.
Yeah.
And remember, Bush lost the popular vote, and it was only because his brother was the...
Oh, we know that.
Okay.
Everywhere.
All right.
So, yeah, the whole world knows
all right,
that.
So 2004, first off, there was vote suppression, again, of African-Americans, and then also there's a whole problem with these electronic voting machines that were controlled by Bush supporters, and the chair of the Bush reelection campaign in Ohio, just like in Florida before, was the Secretary of State, the person responsible for the voting machines and for counting them.
Right.
So what they can do is actually get these elections close enough and then they can put the cheat in.
Yeah, put the fix in. And that's my fear, that it will be close enough that they will be able to do that again. And I hope I'm wrong. Anyway, I really hope you guys vote Democratic this time around.
Thank you, Will.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right. Well, I thought we'd be overwhelmed by calls from Ontario. If there are people, and I know that there's some of you who are listening overseas that are in other industrialized countries with national health programs that aren't private like ours, and we don't have to pay through the nose. And I mean, it's one of the things that hurt the auto companies so badly, that they have to pay all this. In other countries, the government pays it. Oh, it's more positive things. Free national health program, free university housing, public works program, and, oh, man, the other thing just slipped out of my brain. I'll get back to it. But I was saying that if there's people in other countries that can call cheaply, let us know how your health system works as well. Our number here, I don't know what the country code is or anything like that, but it's 313-298-9743. 313-298-9743. Let's go to Clinton Township. It's Aaron. Hi, Aaron. Peter Werby with you. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up, man?
How you doing?
I mean, I got it made. But unfortunately, a lot of the other people in our state don't.
Right.
And, that's what I want to talk about is that, you know, anybody who has any kind of benefit plan, anybody who's got any kind of pension, they're in a minority right now. Many of the young people entering the workforce, they don't have anything to look forward to as far as, you know, why would you dedicate yourself to some company because you're not getting anything back for it.
Well, the other thing is, workers always, usually, I mean, say 90-95% of workers dedicate themselves to the company, to its mission, to the work that they're given to carry out. Companies could care less. They'll screw you in a half a second. Yeah, and they say, well, too bad, man, you're out of here.
If it don't make dollars, it don't make sense.
Well, that's pretty unfortunate. You know, the Japanese, I don't even think they have that anymore. They used to have something called the Iron Rice Bowl. The Iron Rice Bowl, it meant you were guaranteed lifetime of employment. I don't know if they can still carry that out, but the idea that you can just take a community, take a individual workers, they and their families, throw them on the trash heap, and then you have Wall Street complaining that Ford isn't laying off enough people, that they're not closing enough plants, they're not dealing this death blow to the hopes and dreams and income of enough people. I mean, it's really outrageous.
It's profits over people, and it's a continuing cycle, and too many people are apathetic or they're comfortable enough where it doesn't seem like anyone's willing to fight or do anything or get out of the comfort zone enough to say, hey, this isn't right, and we need a better...
Yeah, well, the example's all there. Just go to Mexico, look at what's happening in Mexico City, look what's happening in Oaxaca, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's a good time to go there. I know what I was going to say. Thank you. I'm sorry. I just hung up on him without even saying goodbye. My apologies. That we ought to restore all the tax cuts on the rich. And taxes, we could have in this country easily a $50,000 off-the-top, I always forget that word. Is it deduction? Is that it? In other words, that first $50,000 of our income wouldn't even be taxed. Wouldn't even be taxed at all. There is such ultra wealth in this country that the people at the top can easily pay the freight, the corporations that are raking it in with obscene profits. We could do that and still have free education and free health care and free daycare and all of this stuff. It could be done across the world. But you have this concentration of wealth of people that couldn't even possibly spend the enormous amount that they have. So they got to dream up things. The chair of, retiring chair of ExxonMobil, what do you want? How about a retirement package? I mean, what would you think if you heard I was retiring from WRIF and they were giving me a $5 million retirement package? You'd say, gee, wow, that's me. Well, the chair of ExxonMobil is getting a $400 million retirement package. Guy's in his late 60s. I mean, if he was in his teens, he couldn't possibly spend that. So wealth is all parked there while people are having to pay or to accept wages, like in the city of Chicago where they paid or they passed this bill where, let me see if I can,
road. So, here. Hold on.
Yeah, they passed in Chicago a minimum wage, what they called a living wage, that was requiring retailers to pay at least $10 an hour, the big box retailers like Target and Walmart and places like that. And the council, city council, passed it. $10 an hour. And a lot of you are probably saying, wow, that's cool. Well, that's $20,000 a year. That's not a lot to live on in America, particularly for a family. And get this, though, they had the retailers would have to pay at least $10 an hour by 2010. By 2010! Do you know the profits of Walmart? Do you know how many billions and billions and billions and billions and billions the four remaining family members have? One of them died in a plane crash. I mean, enough that they could pay $25 an hour and give everybody really good health care. But there are these greedy SOBs that for no reason other than the pathology of greed and power don't want to reward people that are giving their whole lives over to them and this profit, the profit pigs that they are. All right, I'll tell you what I really think when I get back. You, in the meantime, call in. I'd like to hear from you. 313-298-WRIF. 313-298-9743. Call, talk, yes, at yahoo.com.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Let's be honest. That 42-inch plasma TV you bought isn't just a TV. It's your baby, your pride and joy. You want to hold it, cuddle it, spend every waking moment with it. And when it comes to HD programming, nothing is too good for your baby. That's why you need Comcast Digital Cable, because your baby deserves local channels in HD and great HD networks like ESPN and Discovery. Not to mention Comcast's exclusive HD On Demand, with tons of high-definition movies and shows ready to watch when you are. And you don't have to buy any extra equipment, which leaves you more money to spoil your baby with, say, surround sound. Better HD options, better HD TV. That's Comcastic.
Call today and get Comcast Digital Cable with HD. It's the easiest way to experience the best in television. Just call 1-888-COMCAST. Service not available in all areas. HD programming limited. HD TV set and HD equipment required to receive HD programming. Equipment extra. Restrictions apply. Call Comcast for details.
Hey, Detroit Lions fans, I'm David Hall from Rock Financial. You got to tune in to Drew and Mike every Monday in the 7 o'clock hour because you're going to hear the latest on the Lions from Tom the Killer Kowalski. And it's brought to you by the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. Tune in, 7 o'clock hour every Monday morning. Listen to the killer.
Is Mike Rogers really working for you? While you pay more at the gas pump, he's received over $150,000 in donations from oil and gas companies and voted to give billions in tax breaks to big oil. While you pay more for health insurance and prescriptions, he's received over $94,000 in campaign contributions from big drug companies, even hitched a ride to a New York City fundraiser on a drug company's corporate jet. Then he voted against allowing Medicare to negotiate with drug companies for lower prices. Isn't it time you had a congressman who works for you?
I'm Jim Marcinkowski. Seems to me big corporations are represented just fine. I know that Michigan families are concerned about their jobs, pensions, and their future. I want to be your representative. I approve of this message and look forward to carrying your message to Washington.
Paid for by Marcinkowski for Congress. Find out more at vote-jim.com. That's vote-jim.com.
32 years ago, Bill Crutchfield turned a car audio hobby into a national catalog business by helping folks get and install the hottest sound technologies, like today's HD radio. With HD radio gear in your car, you'll be able to enjoy dramatically enhanced sound, plus the new free digital music choices you'll discover between the stations. The experts at Crutchfield will help you find the HD radio products that fit your vehicle and send installation guides and gear with most purchases for free. HD radio at crutchfield.com. Discover it.
I was lucky enough to find out about Laurel Langmire. Since then, I own 16 investment properties. I have a C Corp, an S Corp. I have 6 LLCs.
Free yourself from the daily grind of your 9-to-5 job.
My experience in the first 4 months, I walked away with almost $300,000.
Laurel Langmire has personally coached hundreds of entrepreneurs into financial freedom.
Laurel and her team blew me away, and I went, I got to work with this lady.
Laurel teaches you how to live in a wealth cycle and stay there. A master of customized one-on-one guidance, Laurel Langmire can place you on the road to financial independence.
Hi, I'm Laurel Langmire. Creating wealth is not as difficult as you may think. If you're ready to turn your financial dreams into reality, then I want you to have my experience. Cash Stream Money Makeover CD for free.
Call now for this limited time special offer. Get Laurel's Money Makeover CD and her best-selling book, The Millionaire Maker, both the book and the CD for free. You only pay a small shipping fee. Call 800-576-0453. 800-576-0453.
You're finished with back-to-school shopping. Now it's time for the back-to-snow sale at Boyne Country Sports. Check out the hot new arrivals from K2, Nautica, Fisher, Burton, and more. Find huge savings on all your winter gear and get ready for a great season of skiing and boarding at the Boynes. Save on our top-of-the-line 06-07 ski packages like the Ladies Solomon Siam N8, just $6.49. The Men's K2 Apache Recon, West 1200, now only $9.49. Other adult ski packages start from just $2.69. Trade in your crappy old skis, buy new ones, and receive a $100 gift card. Some restrictions apply. In the Just for Kids department, ask about our Junior Has a Fit program and see how you can get 100% credit toward next year's junior equipment. And when you purchase any kid's ski jacket, you'll receive a free admission ticket to Avalanche Bay Indoor Water Park at Boyne Mountain. The Back to Snow sale is on now and runs through Sunday, September 24th. Boyne Country Sports in Novi, Bluefield Hills, Petoskey, and Traverse City. Visit us at BoyneCountrySports.com.
Your Metro Detroit Lincoln Mercury dealers present One Tank Wonders, featuring the 2007 Mercury Milan, the smart midsize sedan that gets up to 540 miles on one 17.5-gallon tank of gas. So, what can you discover on One Tank?
The hallowed halls of Canton.
Ooh, that Swedish furniture store?
Nope, Canton, Ohio, home of the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Pretty long drive.
One man, the Ohio Turnpike, and a 65-mile-an-hour speed limit. Frankly, it's nothing I'd attempt without a Mercury Milan.
Why's that?
You ever driven through mid-Ohio? Corn, soybeans, and state police.
Sounds like the perfect place to get into that Stadium Rock playlist on your MP3 player.
I just plug it in right here.
Nice.
Plus, I'll be surrounded by some of the greatest defenders in the business.
Linebackers?
Airbags. Front, back, side curtains.
Standard?
Yep. I will go all the way!
Visit your Metro Detroit Lincoln Mercury dealer or LMAplan.com. Check out the 2007 Mercury Milan and discover your own One Tank Wonders. You gotta put Mercury on your list. EPA estimated miles per gallon, 23 City, 31 Highway, Milan, I-4.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Night Call this hour brought to you by Waking Up, Metro Detroit Sweatshop Free Clothing Store, located in the Universal Mall at 12 Mile Road in DeQuinder and Warren, and at WakingUpStore.com. Phone number here, 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. An international dispute has developed on the program about the Canadian health program. Rob from Windsor just said he's glad when a conservative government like Stephen Harper is in power and that the Canadian system of health just doesn't work very well. Will from Windsor said it was a lot better than he said, and certainly nothing can be worse than what we have in this country. If you're middle class like I am, if you have a well-funded health program like I do through my employer and through my union, by the way, well, then it's great. But if you're one of the probably 80 million people in this country with either no or bad health care coverage, you would look upon what is happening in Canada with great envy if you already don't. Let's see here. Nicholas writes, maybe someone should tell Rob that health care is controlled for the most part by the provincial government. Ontario's health care took a flying leap down the crapper during Mike Harris's conservative reign of the late 90s and early zeros, along with education and labor. So maybe Rob should go back to grade 9 and learn the government structure of the country. Brian from Windsor says, your caller Rob has not had his eyes open over time. In the 80s, in Canada, with the conservative government sucked and was not a good time here. Harper will hopefully get the boot soon. And yes, military defense spending is nothing but a bad thing for Canada. You are right about us having a great thing with health care. Rob must be just a guy that has been spoiled with what we have and has no idea how lame it would be to lose it. Great show as usual. Great to hear some enlightenment on the radio. He was only once a week. Oh, that's enough for me, I'll tell you. Well, I want to get this call on from Windsor. This is Jolaine. Jolaine, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Good. What do you think? You're from Cottam, eh?
I'm from Cottom, and I think you're a little wrong. Our healthcare system isn't all that great because unless you have health insurance through your employer, there's a lot of things that OHIP does not cover. They don't cover ambulance rides. There's a lot of meds they don't cover. And I also work in Detroit at one of the hospitals, and we have a lot of patients who have no insurance whatsoever, and they get excellent care, and the hospital ends up absorbing the cost of taking care of these people.
Well, they do. And anyone who comes into one of the emergency rooms in the Detroit Medical Center that is not turned away like they were years ago in this country because they don't have health insurance. But it's been shown over and over again in study after study that people without health insurance fail to get regular medical care that only go when they're at a crisis point. And again, any failing of any government-funded healthcare system has to do with financing, and it's a matter of allocation as to where your funds are going to go. Sure, and I know that the Canadian system does not, for instance, if I got rid of the joint employer union coverage that I have and went to solely Ontario's system, my health care coverage would be less than what it is now, right?
Exactly. And
okay. So what does that tell us?
You probably wouldn't even be able to have, like, a family physician. There's a lot of people over here that don't have that, whether, you know, they let it lapse or, in my mother's case, her physician retired. She can't get a physician. So people are being seen in clinics. There's no continuance of care.
So what does that tell us?
Our system is not that great.
Well, I think that what I said, it's underfunded. Like, this country's health system is underfunded unless you happen to have the money through private sources, union or employer. So what is wrong with the Canadian system has to do with having not enough money to be able to provide full coverage. So that's what I said. You can take your choice and go Stephen Harper's route and start pouring billions and billions of dollars into an unneeded military, or you can put it into the healthcare system.
You could, or you could spend all the money we have in the plus and do it that way, too. I don't know what the answer is. I don't think our system's the greatest thing in the world. In fact, I kind of like the system that is in the States.
You like a system where there's tens of millions of people that are uninsured? Why would you want to curse Canada with the healthcare system that has that is ranked something like 37th in providing services in the world? Canada is way above that in every standard. It is. If it's not you can't believe how little health care people in the United States get compared to Canada or England or Italy or Sweden or France or any of those countries. Yeah, I think the caller's right. You just don't know what it's like here, even if you work there.
Well, I just know that when I try to get health care here, that's a hassle. Even in an ER visit, I couldn't get my son seen, so I end up bringing him to Detroit. So.
Well, all right, good. Thank you. I appreciate it. When you have individual anecdotes, a lot of times those will color overall. But the United States is one of the most inefficient in terms of amount of money spent to medical care delivered of any of the industrial countries in the world. And it's like I said, if your system is ours is underfunded because it leaves out tens of millions of people. I know there's, what was it, like 42 million with none. And then there's another bulk, 20, 30 million people that have health insurance that only covers them for the most catastrophic. In fact, maybe some of you tell me. Why am I telling you about you? You tell me. 313-298-WRIF. Let's do that. Here is Diane. Diane's in Allenton. You're on the air.
Hi.
Yeah, I had, well, I thought what I had was a stroke. I went completely numb on one side, and I had health insurance through my father. They said it was a non-emergency. I thought I was having a stroke. I couldn't see.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't speak. I couldn't feel one side of my body. And I woke up in convulsions. I go to the hospital. I went to West Bloomfield, Henry Ford. They said it was a non-emergency. I owe them $5,000, and I'm not going to pay it.
Wow.
Now I have health coverage throughout back West Bloomfield, and I can go see my regular doctor, and they can figure out what's wrong with me. Come to find out, they do think that I did have a stroke back at that time. This was only a year ago, and I just turned 20.
Wow. Boy.
You know, somebody, you know, goes into a hospital at 20 years old thinking that they are having a stroke, and they don't give them adequate health care here.
Well, that's what, I mean, I'll repeat what I said earlier. Any failing in the Canadian system is because it's not funded enough, and they are doing everything they can to deliver health care. In the United States, everything is done to give you as little health care as possible.
Well, here in the States, I hate to say it, but we're lazy. We want to do everything the quick, easy way and make the most amount of money doing it. If we could sit on our butts.
Well, I don't know who
watching,
Diane, I don't know who the we is. Most people here are doing the opposite of what you're saying. They're working their butt off, not sitting on it.
Well, I'm saying as far as the doctors go, I've noticed that a lot of the doctors that I've gone through many, many different hospitals, many different doctors, and they just try to load you up with as much drugs and make the most amount of money as possible.
Well, there is the opposite thing as well. Excessive tests, and they say, well, you know, I got a headache. Well, we better give you an MRI. We're all like that. So you're winding up charging your HMO thousands of dollars that they bill them for. So the medical system in this country is really just another one of the rackets. I mean, we're essentially ruled by rackets, beginning with the government, which is this massive racket. I mean, it always was kind of a racket. Now it's 100% a racket. And the rest of the institutions wind up to be that as well. Well, Diane, I got to get another call. You feeling better these days?
Yeah, I'm actually on enough medication so where I'm able to function normally and no problems now.
Okay, well, you take it easy and good health to you. Let's go to Al in Inkster. Al, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Thank you. Go ahead.
Now that woman from Canada should try sitting here without any health coverage.
Well, okay. I mean, you know, yes, I know what you're saying. I mean, she at least had some experience, and I'm, you know, most people in bureaucratic systems, and I'm sure always have a lot of complaints. But go on with what you're saying. What is it like having no insurance?
Well, you sweat out every time you take your dog for a walk in the wintertime, but you don't slip on a patch of ice and break a leg.
Well, but she's right. If you broke a leg. If you broke a leg, Al, you could get wherever the big Inkster hospital is and the big hospital down there. You could go right to the ER. They would fix it up in a second. You would get absolutely good health care, and they would bill you. I mean, they would bill you, you know, $3,000.
Oh, yeah.
But you would have access to it. But, I mean, I almost don't want to. I feel badly about even describing my health care insurance because it probably. I mean, people may have even resented what I said. I mean, who the hell am I that I should have be covered by two health plans, you know, my employer and my union, where other people don't have any? It's not like I could even share it. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying, well, put Al on. Put Al on it too. Yeah, he could. But right. Yeah, go into the hospital. I'll tell him you're me.
Yep, the bad part about not having health care is sitting here worrying about, you know, because you know something's wrong with yourself, but, you know, you can't afford to go to a doctor to check it out. If you do go to a doctor and check it out and you finally do get health care, you know, maybe they consider it a pre-existing condition and then they, you know, well, we don't cover that.
Yeah. No,
you know?
That's true. It sure is. All right. Thank you for your story. I appreciate it. Other stories, 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Here's Joe in Mount Clemens. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing? Go ahead.
Hey, I had over Memorial Weekend. I got no insurance. I was riding my son, me and my son, I was showing him how to ride a mini bike, leaning, showing him all the stuff. Well, I hit a patch of gravel, got road rash from one side of me up and down to the other side, clean fixed it myself, went to a clinic just to say, you know, hey, how much did you do to you know, someone to you know, have to make sure I got everything? And $290 to look at me, and I was like, oh, yeah, I can't even afford to pay my child support. I'm paying it, but you know what I mean? And then you know, it's like, it's incredible. I'm trying, I work 7 days a week, and I make $10 an hour, and I can't afford to live. And then I got to pay insurance. I can't even afford my insurance for my kids, which I'm supposed to pay for my child support. And I can't even afford my child support, which is $200 a week.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, that's criminal when you have hundreds of billions of dollars of our tax money wasted on this war based on a lie in Iraq, because all that money there could probably fund a health system easily. If we have that kind of excess money in the treasury that we're all putting into it, even if you're making $10 an hour. So what are you getting for your $10? What are you getting for the buck and a half or so or dollar they take out of your $10 an hour? You're getting a war in Iraq as opposed to being able to go in and pay your...
I can't. that dollar I make is going to go pay for my back child support.
Yeah.
I feel that, the only people that are making money are these people that are in the tax, that black book tax thing, where they don't have to pay taxes and all that stuff. If you guys, all these big companies, I'm so disgusted with this. 75 years ago, they had other means of making cars that can run on different fuels. And you know what? Where's all this fuel going? They're taking it out of the ground. They're making the earth lighter because they can't replace all the stuff they're taking out of because it's getting burned and getting evaporated. So that's putting us in making the earth lighter. So what's that doing to our earth?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, actually your call's breaking up a little, but if you can get a DVD called Who Killed the Electric Car? Who Killed the Electric Car? It's pretty eye-opening. They don't. Bush, in a moment of weakness, said we're addicted to oil, and he's one of the pusher men. You know? Remember that old Steppenwolf song, Pusher Man? God damn the Pusher Man. All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you for calling. I'm sorry this is all happening and your story is repeated tens of millions of times, which I know doesn't do you any good when you try to cash your check and make it stretch farther than it can. Here's Ben in Chesterfield. Ben, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi. How's it going?
Going great. Thanks for calling in.
I was just calling to share a story. Last April, or April a year ago, I had my daughter was born, and she was frank breech throughout the whole birthing process, and they had to go in and have cesarean section. My fiance had had three children before. She had had several miscarriages, so there was complications with the pregnancy. And after the birth, she retained a lot of water. They released her from the hospital after 5 days, and she went home, and she thought she had bronchitis, so she went back to the hospital after went home for a couple days. And turns out she had postpartum cardiomyopathy. Now, granted, it's a very rare something that doesn't happen very often, but she almost died, and we tried telling the doctors that she was retaining water, and they're just trying to push us out of the hospital, trying to get us out as soon as we can because we didn't have insurance.
Yeah.
And they almost killed her. The doctors, the nurses were telling her that if she wasn't there within a couple hours, she probably would have died. And it's just appalling to me. Not saying that these people from Canada think that they have it bad, but
they sure got it better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
to say the least.
And like I'll keep emphasizing, if they weren't wasting their money on their military, they could be allocating that to something that supported their citizens. But what they're trying to do under this conservative, typical conservative, is they're trying to feed the corporations, because that's one of the things. War has a lot of functions in the conservative ideology, and one of it is to feed the big corporations. So... All right, well, I don't even know how to, best of luck, I guess, but we need more than luck. Thank you, sir. I mean, it's not. I mean, why should we have a social system based on luck? The luck of where you were born, the luck of your job, the luck if you get a good job, it doesn't go away overseas or it's mismanaged by these bonehead suits that don't know how to run a car company or whatever other country company has gone under. It's no, let's see here. Let's go to Tim. Tim's in Detroit. Tim, hi. It's Peter Werby. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Pete. How you doing tonight?
Doing good.
Yeah, I was kind of compelled to call in regarding the whole healthcare debate. Well, I would have to say to the lady from calling from Canada that I think in terms of infant mortality, the United States I think ranks at least 50th.
It's
or thereabouts in the world.
Well, yeah, and if you just started doing inner cities of poor blacks, Hispanics, and poor whites, it winds up being identical to some of the worst third world rates. Infant mortality, folks, in case you don't know, it's children that don't survive to 1 year. And no, the U.S. is way out of the running in that. Yeah.
And to me, I think it's all basically based on, and I'll put this in quotes, a market system of healthcare. In other words, the idea with the United States healthcare program is that you have this so-called competition that occurs among insurance companies and medical facilities for the so-called the best bang for your buck. But what happens is you have sort of a governmental kind of a favoring of certain, you know, companies in terms of drug companies and also medical care facilities. So pretty much those companies that fund your politicians and have a lot of capital to spend on advertising and so on, you know, kind of skew the system. And furthermore, a lot of these companies that support corporations, in other words, if you work for a certain corporation, let's say like for Ford or so on, you're going to be fairly well covered. At least that was the case up to the modern day. But, I mean, if you don't work for a major company, the chances of a person being insured are pretty low.
Sure.
Where with Canada, you do have at least a sort of a naissant, governmental system. The trouble is it's woefully underfunded and it's pretty much provincially based. And a lot of the provinces, for their own political interests, often do not fund the provincial health care programs either, and hence you have a lot of problems in the Canadian system. But it's not because of the paradigm itself. It's more because it's not funded enough.
Sure, absolutely. You are right, it's, again, what I said. It's a choice of how they allocate their funds. I was trying to type in, why doesn't my computer write infant work right? Infant mortality rate, U.S., and you can get our standing. It is a disgrace, actually. And you can see in those raw statistics how that the United States spends more money per capita, including the people that aren't insured, than any other country in the world, yet we still have tens of millions of people that are denied basic health care because they know they can't go to a doctor because they're afraid of the cost that they're going to incur. And you still get people saying, well, we don't want socialized medicine. Man, how can people be that dumb? I don't know. All right. Here's Jerry in St. Clair Shores. Jerry, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Doing good.
I'd like to point out with this healthcare problem how we're really cheating ourselves by not having a national healthcare system. If you look at something like pandemic diseases like bird flu, this E. coli thing going on, and even the Canadian experience with SARS, when you have people who live paycheck to paycheck who are afraid to go to the doctor or hospital due to financial ruin, that gives these diseases time to spread because early detection is the key. And I think we may have avoided a worldwide pandemic in Canada due to SARS because they had a national health care system that was able to detect the disease, contain it early before it had an opportunity to spread.
Yeah, because, right, it was in Toronto, right?
Exactly. Oh. In America, we don't have that. People will get a cold and feel, well, I have to make the rent. I have to do this. I can't afford a doctor bill. And most of these early symptoms are very much like a common cold. It takes early detection to contain these things. And by not having a national health care system, people will not go to the doctor, and these things, and it places us at risk. And I don't think people understand that aspect of it.
Well, I sure did. That's extraordinarily interesting. I never thought of that.
Yeah, and I think that speaks as a metaphor for so many other things. Why it is so important to invest in public health, public education, public infrastructure, things that are an insurance policy that as society we can fall back on and have more options to face whatever challenges they be.
Well, one of the things now, as things are currently structured, there's no way in the world that the United States can afford the kind of health system that every other industrialized country in the world has. So we have the wealthiest country in the world, but we have frittered away our fortune, not only on the Iraq War, but by not taxing the wealthy enough, by sending it down the rat hole of military spending that is would ultimately be unnecessary. And again, it's our choice, just like I was saying about Canada. So we can either have all that, or we can we can continue to fund things as they are. All right, thank you so much. That's an interesting point. It's hard for me. See, this is what producer. I'm sorry, Jay. I'm not being critical of you, but you're not that kind of folk or that kind of. Never mind. Let me start again. The reason that I'm bumbling away here is I'm looking at the infant mortality rate. Singapore, Sweden, Hong Kong, Japan, Iceland, Finland, Norway, Malta, the Czech Republic, Andorra, Germany, France, Macau. I wonder if that's down to 13. Let's see where we can get the U.S. Oh, my. Canada. Canada's only 22nd. Spain, Switzerland, France, all these other countries. And United Kingdom, Ireland, Greece, where is the U.S.? Did I skip it? Cuba's 34th. Here we go. United States, infant mortality rate, 6.63 deaths per 1,000 live births. So is this not a disgrace? When I always say, people say, in the United States, number one. In what? Military expenditures? So Cuba, which I visited, which you see, poor people. Very poor. In fact, out of my hotel window, I could see this this clinic, and people were lined up like 30 deep. I mean, you and I, we'd think, this is terrible. Got to line up for health care like that. But that's the best they can do, given it's a poor country. They've had this big blockade of the United States for almost 50 years. But it's still children. You remember these Republicans are always talking about family values? Well, they condemn children to death in this country where it can be helped. Can't be helped in Cuba because they're poor. The United States is wealthy and it's below a poor country. I mean, isn't that a disgrace? All right, let's take another call before our break. Is it Janjean?
Janine.
What is it?
Janine.
Oh, yeah, I see. Al has, our phone screener has inventive spelling, yeah. Janine, yeah.
Yes, hi, how you doing? I've been listening to your show. I'm actually on my way home from work. I'm a massage therapist. I volunteer down at the Veterans Hospital.
Oh, that is so good of you, Janine.
I tell you what, but it's a dual-edged sword when it comes to health care as well as military issues. Because I do believe we do need to have some type of structure that is military-based, but the monies aren't floundered around like it's just free spending. But then again, with the health care issue, I'm just recently divorced. I had no health care. And being a massage therapist, you know, you work on your own. You have to pay $500 a month for COBRA to get one iota of coverage that you would have if you worked for a business.
Sure.
And even doing that, you still get nothing. I think something is better than nothing, but I think somebody also has to delegate authority on this where you can have both. You know, people mm-hmm. need to be able to go to the doctor, not be afraid to call 911, not be afraid to have, you know, bills like $5,000 are absolutely ridiculous. You know, for what? Just to go there into emergency and have a doctor see you?
Yeah, I know. It's outrageous.
My boyfriend lives in Ireland. They have a health care system that doesn't matter what, you go there. You know, it could be anybody that visits this country. Anybody can go, kind of like Canada, but their taxes are higher. Are we willing to forgo some things to get that? So I think it's a dual-edged sword.
Well, the higher taxes, I was saying earlier about how this right-winger was crowing on the air about this Socialist Party being defeated in Sweden. and that people are sick of paying high taxes. Nobody, I mean, if you got something really demonstrable for your taxes, if we looked at our taxes and we saw, boy, we have the greatest schools around. We have small classrooms. The schools themselves are beautiful places. All the materials are there. The roads are perfect. You could get anywhere across the lakes because there's like 4, 5, 6 ferries. Free university education, as I was saying earlier, on and on like that. But, you know, we don't even need high taxes here because I said we could do all that and have a $50,000 deduction right off the top. There's enough wealth coming into the ultra wealthy and to the corporations that money way beyond what is even humanly necessary to reward people under capitalism for what they've done. People don't need $127 million a year income. They could be taxed like they used to up till 20, 30, or about 30 or 40 years ago. Everything over $6 million was taxed at 90%. So let those folks pay the taxes. Middle-class people, particularly working-class people, and certainly poor who don't pay much taxes, but they can't afford to pay it and shouldn't have to. The people that can should, and then they could still have these opulent lifestyles and go buy dresses for $800. All right, I got to take a break. Thank you for your call.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Tired of shopping for clothes from companies that use sweatshop labor to produce them? Well, check out the Waking Up store at the Universal Mall in Warren. Waking Up stocks sweatshop-free clothing for men and women and carries U.S.-made and union-made jeans and shirts. Yes, real American-made blue jeans. They also carry clothes made from eco-fabrics such as organic cotton and hemp. They require no pesticides or insecticides to grow, and hemp resists mildew and bacteria and is more durable and breathable than cotton. All of Waking Up's eco-fiber vendors are Co-op America approved, which means they've gone through Co-op America's screening process and are clean, green, and sweatshop free. Waking Up carries free trade coffee, chocolate, and accessories. They also have a media section with books and magazines and a community bulletin board. So check out Waking Up at the Universal Mall in Warren on 12 Mile in DeQuinder or visit their website at WakingUpStore.com. They're waking up. Are you?
For a limited time, get a $77 Visa gift card free when you open a new checking account at TCF Bank. Certain restrictions apply. See TCF for details.
Have you been thinking about changing your life by getting rid of your glasses or contact lenses? You owe it to yourself to call Dr. Tafor to find out everything you need to know about LASIK. Trusting your vision to a LASIK surgeon is one of the most important decisions you'll ever make. You'll want the best and most experienced LASIK surgeon offering the most advanced laser technology. Technology that's customized specifically for your vision. You want Dr. Tafor in the Windsor Laser Eye Institute. Only Dr. Tafor and the Windsor Laser Eye Institute stand behind their results for life by offering lifetime enhancements. Just think about how amazing it would be to begin each day by opening your eyes and seeing everything clearly without glasses or contacts. Take the first step and book your no-charge consultation with Dr. Tafor today. Call 1-800-663-IC. That's 1-800-663-ISEE. Or visit Dr. Tafor and the Windsor Laser Eye Institute online at WLEI.com. With the most experience, personalized treatment, and state-of-the-art technology, why would you trust your eyes to anyone else?
Now, is this what you have to look forward to this fall?
And so Caesar's army overthrew Pompeii, and he was subsequently named emperor of the Roman Empire. Any questions?
Hey, it's Doug Podell from The Riff. And if you're going to learn anything in school, why not train for a career that can put you in the middle of all the action? Here at The Riff, we're out at concerts, events, and parties all year long. Ever notice the local TV stations seem to be everywhere? Well, one of the benefits of the business is that you really see events up close and personal. The Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts gives you the hands-on experience you need for an exciting career just like that in radio, television, audio, or video production. See for yourself with a no-obligation personal tour online at spexhoward.edu or drop by for a free Wednesday walk-in tour between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Mornings, afternoon, and evening classes are available, plus financial aid is available to those who qualify. Fall and winter classes are forming now. Hurry, call by September 29th. The Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts in Southfield, Michigan, 248-358-9000. This is where you start.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome back to our final live segment. At 1 o'clock, we're going to have a couple of pre-recorded interviews. First one with Tom Hartman. And you can look up his website, TomHartmann.com. He's a nationally syndicated talk show host, an old pal of mine. I was on the same national syndicate with him. And he's written a book called Screwed, The Undeclared War on the Middle Class. So it keeps up with what we were talking about. And then also Father Roy Bourgeois, Catholic priest who heads the School of America's Watch, SOAW.org. It's a school that for years taught torture and ways that, this is down Fort Benning, Georgia, the way that South American dictators could send their troops up here to learn how to repress their own people. Not very many countries still going. But let's see. Man, I love you folks so well because I really think about stuff, and I think to my limits, because this is my job. And then you always come up with things I haven't thought about. And I'm not, I'm not being condescending or schmoozing you or anything like that. I mean, I think, why did I say this? So remember there was the woman who worked as a nurse in Detroit, and she said she couldn't get her kid the service, medical service he wanted. In fact, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the Canadian health system versus the U.S., and there's been a couple people who have been critical of the Canadian health system. It turns out mostly that it's underfunded, but it really is set up to give as much possible care as it can, whereas the United States system, the absolute opposite, while making the same amount of money. So here is what Terry writes into talkyes@yahoo.com. Did I miss something? He says. It seems that the lady from Canada has two chances at health care. This is two chances more than millions of Americans have. So she's grumpy, and maybe understandably so, that she can't get the proper health care in her own country, but she has the connections. She can come here and get it. So she's got two shots of it. Tens of millions of us don't have any. All right, so let's see here. I don't get this one, really, but says, please put somebody on the show who does not think the sudden drop in gas prices is related to the upcoming election. Well, I don't know if I can do that. Talking about gas prices, Robert writes in, for some reason, the Bush administration has told us that Hugo Chavez is the evil dictator of Venezuela, but they really have not explained what he is doing that is so evil. Maybe the phrase evil dictator is supposed to be reason enough. What do you think the real reason is? Well, he's trying to take countries out of the U.S. trade orbit. And he is saying that there should not be unrestricted U.S. capital penetration and extraction of profit from these Latin American countries. Chavez's buddies with all the big oil companies except for ExxonMobil, and they're doing exploration and pumping and creating new facilities, even to the point where I'm critical of it. But there's nothing in Chavez that he does as a dictator. And he also doesn't like, of course, like true fascists, Bush doesn't like anyone who criticizes the people in power. Whereas you can do that in Venezuela, where I also was. I was in Caracas in January. And there is not another opposition press anywhere in the world. I'm trying to think if I would stand corrected. I think that it has the most virulent anti-government media of any country in the world. Venezuela does. That they rip Hugo Chavez, the president, the duly elected popular president, a new one, every single day. They accuse him of every crime on the planet. I mean, we call Bush Co. or, you know, the Bush crime family. I mean, they just are unrelenting in what they say about their president. And that doesn't happen in a dictatorship. Let's see, one more. By the way, one of the reasons, there's a couple open lines I wanted to give Al, our phone screener, a chance to get you on the air. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Big, I'll just call him Big, writes in, Death of a President. That's a retrospective documentary that is based on that George Bush has been assassinated. Just won a prize at the Toronto Film Festival, Toronto International Film Festival, and has caused a stir, styled as big as a retrospective documentary in the words of Helmer? What does that mean? Director. I was Gabriel Range. The fictional picture resembled more than anything the multitude of September 11th documentaries crowding cable channels in recent weeks, except in this case, the national tragedy is the assassination of Bush on October 19th, 2007. It's very frightening subject matter, actually. All right. Let's go. Let's go back to our phones, and I've got to have a couple callers from Windsor. Here is it, Monier. Hi. Wait. I'm sorry. I don't even have you up. Hi. You're on the air.
How are you, Peter?
Is that your name, Monier?
Yeah. I'm from Windsor.
Go ahead, Monier. You're on the air.
Yeah. I came to Canada before 6 years from Yemen, and I would like to speak about the medical system here.
Sure.
The medical system is great in Canada. Some people, they don't appreciate that because they don't live in a county without medical system. Back home, if you go to the hospital, if you have no money, if you don't pay a deposit, you don't get treatment, you die.
Boy.
So here is great. And like I go to the doctor, it's free. I go to the hospital, it's free. My kids get the vaccines. Everything is free. Of course, the implants is not free because... if the ambulance is free, everyone's going to call the ambulance for headache. Everyone's going to call the ambulance to get a ride free to the downtown hospital.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Call the ambulance.
A guy told me he was on welfare. You know, when welfare people call the ambulance, the welfare people pay for the ambulance. And he told me he used to call the ambulance to get a ride free to downtown. So we should thank the government for the health system. It's a very, very good health system. I don't care about my health, my kids' health. And about the private family doctors, yes, we have short and family doctors, but there is a lot of walk-in clinic. I go to walk-in clinic here in Tecumseh and Campo. There is three doctors there. I didn't wait more than 30 or 40 minutes. And I'm just want to say my opinion.
Well, that's what we're here for, Monier, and I thank you for making our program doubly international, both Canada and then also the way it was in Yemen.
We have president in Yemen. He's 28 years in the president, and he always talk about how he built the country, but if you have no money, you die in front of the hospital. Believe me, you can ask anyone in Yemen.
Well, thank you, Monier. I appreciate your perspective. I didn't want to read this email because it came from someone who'd already written, but I guess he is... it's worth. Says we have a doctor shortage because of the Mulroney conservative government in the late 80s. They cut medical school space by 10% in 1989. We have a two-tier system that was incepted in, I don't know what the verb means, in Ontario in the late 90s, where many services were taken off of the Ontario Health Insurance Plan, such as physiotherapy, radiology, ambulance service, etc. Both of these things are huge reasons that our system isn't working. Both were brought in by the conservatives. I would rather have a corrupt leftist government than a sociopathic conservative government any day. And what are you talking about? The Liberal Party in Canada had these scandals. And they're nothing like the scandals that are here in the U.S., to be sure. Let's go to Mike in Utica. Mike, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I just wanted to say I've worked for a few companies around the metro Detroit area, and it always seems to be the same thing when it comes to health care. I mean, you get charged a certain amount, you get a certain amount taken out of your check per week, and it seems like every year or every 2 years, they're shopping around for, a cheaper health plan, something, but you always end up getting less than what you had before.
Sure.
And paying just about the same as what you were before, or maybe a little bit more for less services. And it's a big breakdown in the healthcare system around here.
Well, that's why, we have the capacity to install a national, federally funded healthcare system, but not having a warrior state as well. There's kind of some choices here. Do we want to have hundreds of bases all around the world? Do we want to supply billions and billions of dollars to other countries so that they can buy our weapons so then they can fight each other or attack one another? It's all, it's what I keep saying, that same word. It's how do we allocate the money that we earn? I don't want my money going to buy weapons so Israel can attack Lebanon. I'd like to have it so people have the same health care opportunities that I do. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Things have happened, too, because of the expanding amount of money that is sucked out of the health care system by the people making the profit off it. It ought to be nonprofit as well. That my union insurance, which had no, I'm not sure exactly, I don't know if I want the word copay, but it used to be zero a year. I mean, I still had to pay copay for medicine and copay for doctor's visits. But now it's like 2,400. I have to pay into it at $2,400 a year. Really, that's a pay cut, and it's because the union health fund is not funded as well as it was because of the anti-union climate in this country, and also because of the increasing cost of health care. So I'm not blaming my union. In fact, the union does not even run. Unions don't run their own, I don't think any of them do, run their own health care programs. So why are things getting worse? Why are we the wealthiest country in the world and things getting worse? Tell me that. Here's Yvonne in Windsor. Yvonne, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Peter. I'm from Canada here, Windsor. And I have a view that the problems in our healthcare system are not due necessarily entirely to mismanagement, like you were saying, the lack of funding due to the financing of other programs like the military and so on. I think there may be some deliberate chipping away at it going on through deliberate mismanagement. I don't know if I'm using the word right, but malfeasance maybe as opposed to misfeasance.
Sure, that's exactly right.
Yeah, and I think that the eventual purpose behind this would be to eventually begin allowing in more of the private insurance companies, as you are so familiar with in the U.S.
That's exactly what's happening. I said earlier that the new president of the Canadian Medical Association owns the largest private hospital in Canada, out in B.C., in British Columbia, and it's illegal to establish these things.
It is, yeah. It goes against NAFTA, for one thing. There's kind of a low-key examination going on as to the legality, according to NAFTA agreement, of the two-tier system, you know, which some feel is the inevitable direction here that Canada is leading to. And so that's, you know, some private clinics, hospitals, and so on available for those that are willing to pay in order to jump the line and avoid the long waits for elective surgery. So it's possible that having that sort of thing might violate some aspect of the NAFTA agreement. And so my concern is that eventually we could go over completely to the private system, as you have in the U.S., perhaps more quickly than we would think at this point, you know, and anticipate at this point, due to this legal loophole. And
maybe, but there's never been a country that has gone back. I mean, some countries have had this for 50, 60, 70.
You mean gone back to what? The private?
Gone back to a private, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, I see it as sort of a deliberate thing. I mean, cutting the spaces in medical schools and so on, it just doesn't make sense. We need doctors, things like that are being cut when it's obviously contributing to the crisis. And it seems just totally stupid. So stupid that I can't believe that it's, mismanagement at that level. You know, there's something more of an agenda, I think, behind it somewhere.
I think it very well could be. Thank you, Yvonne.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. Rexham in Roseville writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. This is regarding our Canadian friend who said hospitals absorb costs of people without health care. If you're a working person who has health insurance and you go to the ER, you will be billed, and if unable to pay your bill, your credit will be destroyed. She talked as if it was free for anyone to go to the ER. The hospitals cannot write off all the uninsured. That would be fast bankruptcy, just ask the Detroit Medical Center. Essentially, I mean, if you have no money, I mean, I guess they can't get blood out of a stone. But if you have any, they're going to come after you. Let's see. Talking about everyone says that the reason the gasoline prices have dropped is because Bushco has gotten its buddies to drop them, because the Republicans, if they go into an election with gas over $3, let's see. Christopher writes in, I work with someone who thinks that the gas prices are lower due to OPEC producing more output to ease world supplies. He thinks they have done this because of the anger in the United States over high prices. He believes the Middle East doesn't have any other goods to sell to the world. If we're able to get mad enough to find a way to not buy the oil, then we would be then they would be screwed. If we're not buying their oil, what would they do to buy food, medicine, and other goods? Well, I mean, it's hard really to sort through it all, but it's pretty interesting that this all came about right at this time, although there could very well be an element of that as well. Here's Lou in Lincoln Park. Lou, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Okay, as far as that health issue, what I was thinking was we've got all these excess dollars from the state, and we've got all these people that are out of work. And if we put that money towards health care and training people for health care, you've got a balance of, you know, what do you call it, supply and demand?
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of people that are going into the supply.
Yeah.
And they're getting government funds to go into the supply. And then what would be the problem with the health care?
Well, there you go. You could take all those people and start. Well, I mean, that's other countries have done that. Poorer countries, for instance, have taken. Have trained people, not even as doctors, but sort of as health care workers that could at least give rudimentary health care. Hey, we will consider that one, Lou. Thank you for joining us. And let's see here. Let's go to Lake Orion and talk to Joe. Joe, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. Thanks.
Hey, you know, I'm just listening to all this, you know, what's going on here, and I can't help but think about, you know, I've always had a thought, you know, about, you know, this whole deal with the healthcare system and, you know, how people want to have, you know, the full free ride and all that kind of bit. And the fact is that when, you know, you run, if you were trying to do that, I seriously believe that you would probably have to deal with rationing at some level. So why not strike a balance of some sort between a totally free system and a pay system where maybe you give, like, preventative care and emergency care as the basic package that everybody's entitled to without cost. And if there's anything above and beyond that, you have to pony up in some way, shape, or form.
Well,
you know,
would,
at least that way you have the right to live, you know, the right to get by, you know, and, you know, it provides some basic level of care. And, you know, the thing that drives me nuts about this country and our healthcare system is that, you know, there's no money really available for preventative care. I mean, it's just like, you know, I got a neighbor, you know, who's got a dead tree hanging over my house, you know, that basically they won't cut it down because it'll cost them $5,000, but the insurance company will pay to fix my house when it causes $60,000 of the damage. You know,
yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
You know, that's insane. The same thing happened with the long story, but with the roof damage. And the same thing happened like two or three times, or twice. And they wouldn't pay, the company wouldn't pay to set it up so this, what the damage wouldn't happen again. So they had to pay several thousand dollars each time. And finally, I thought, I just ran into a guy that said he could both fix it and set it up so it wouldn't, the damage wouldn't occur again. But no, that's absolutely true what you're saying. The only thing is, we're talking about a free ride. I mean, we're talking about any government system is taxpayer funded. So, yeah, hopefully it's what we're paying for and getting it back. All right, Scott, I'm sorry, Bill, Joe, sorry. I've got to get through a number of calls quickly, so thank you for yours. Let's go way up to Owen Sound in Ontario and talk to Bill. Oh, yeah, Owen Sound makes me just think I haven't been up to the Bruce Peninsula in a couple of years, and I miss it. How you doing up there, Bill?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hey, Peter. Anyway, I'm actually here in Detroit.
Okay.
I'm driving through right now. I've been listening to the show for the past hour or so, and I just can't believe some of the Canadian people that have the negative thought. It is a wonderful system. We do not, though, have enough doctors, like they said. And that's why they're, you know, we're getting too many of the people, you know, their children are getting hurt. Oh, they need a Band-Aid, better take them to the doctor. And that's what's causing the big lineup, so to speak.
Now, well, Joe, right before it, he was talking about some kind of control so that you would, that people would essentially apportion the way they use their medical care. Yeah, I mean, other countries, and including two I visited, and Venezuela and Cuba, they have gone to extraordinary lengths to train medical personnel. Stephen Harper wants to train more Canadians to be soldiers, so whenever the United States has a job for them, he can send them off.
Well, you know, that's another problem too. There are so many people from the area I'm from that really don't know why we support the military in that way, because we really don't do anything. They call it policing or peacekeeping or whatnot, but
right, you wind up getting casualties, that's for sure.
Exactly. And it's unnecessary. Money that is spent for the military, yeah, it could go back into getting some of the doctors back.
Yeah.
The other point is that a lot of people don't understand is that the doctors are not paid as well to go into the private practices. And that's why you see them come in, they pick up to be a family doctor, realize, ooh, I'm not making as much. I'm going back into the specialty fields, and I'm taking off.
Wow. Well, one thing, just speaking about Canadian soldiers, you've been up to the tip of the Bruce Peninsula at Tobermory?
I've been up there about 500 times.
Okay. Well, you know that kind of right off to the side of the harbor there's a monument to the Canadian soldiers that died in the Boer War.
Yeah.
The Canadians went from that little town to fight in South Africa for the British Empire.
Yeah.
And I look at that and I think, wow. What's the mentality there? Well, now you got Canadians fighting in Afghanistan. What's that all about?
It shouldn't be there. Bottom line.
Bottom line. All right. Actually, I got to go. I got one or two more calls I can get, but thank you for yours. And here is Chuck. Chuck's in Davison, Michigan. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You're talking about healthcare systems. I thought I'd call and describe the American system. I'm a manager at a large restaurant chain.
Uh-huh.
And, we offer two different healthcare programs. There's the good stuff that I have that's Aetna, and we have something we offer to all employees called the Lifestyles Plan. It's not very good. They pay about $14 a week. And when they have their health expenses, they can send their receipts into the company and get reimbursed for 50% of their costs. Most of the employees don't have it. Most of my employees don't have any health care. Now, me, I got the good stuff, the Aetna program. It costs me $52 a week for family coverage for my whole family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it starts out, we have a $500 deductible, so starting in January. From then till around the end of January, sometime in February, we pay full price for everything, which is like $100 a doctor visit, till we meet the deductible. Then there's a copay after that. Then doctor's visits are only like $20.
That's the good stuff.
That's the good stuff, yeah. My boss had twins last year.
Yeah.
His copay was like $14,000.
Oh, man.
You know, I had a physical last year, and they hadn't reviewed the doctor's credentials yet, so they refused to pay the bill and stuck me with a $400 bill. You know, and this is the good insurance plan that I got.
Yeah. I mean, it's criminal. Actually, unfortunately, Chuck, I have to end this segment of the show right now, but thank you for your final remarks and the description. It's criminal what's being done to us, what the wealth of this nation, where it's going, and not to the majority of us, that's for sure. So let's think about that. Stay tuned for Tom Hartman and Father Roy Bourgeois. I think you'll enjoy these interviews, and we'll talk live next week. Go to my website. Oh, yeah, I should give one final shout-out for that. PeterWerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E.com. I'm going to be hosting a discussion after the movie Jesus Camp along, I'll tell you about it next week, or you can go to the website.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
It's time to live the mortgage expert. 800-333-ROCK.
Hey, if you're currently in an adjustable rate mortgage, or if you're in one of those option arms, well, you got to listen up. I'm David Hall from Rock Financial, and we've got a new exclusive that you can only find with the mortgage experts, and we call it the Secure Advantage. It gives you flexible payment choices each month to properly manage your equity, but without prepayment penalties like your current option arm that you may have. That's right, no prepayment penalties, and this loan is locked until 2011. Call Rock Financial today to find out more. See how the Secure Advantage can cut your payment by up to 50% and increase your monthly cash flow. Check it out today. Call about the Secure Advantage.
It's time to live.
A Quicken Loans Company, Equal Housing Lender.
Did you know that Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan is a non-profit corporation? Because they don't pay dividends to stockholders, they put more money back into Michigan healthcare than any other company. It's part of their non-profit mission. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Attention, neck and arm pain sufferers. Do you or someone you know have neck or arm pain or symptoms like tingling or numbness in the arms or fingers? Are physical therapy and pain medications not helping? Has your doctor diagnosed you with degenerative disc disease and suggested spinal fusion surgery as an option? If the answer is yes to these questions and you're between the ages of 18 and 65, you could be eligible to participate in a clinical research study of an investigational treatment that may potentially decrease neck and arm symptoms and improve function after spine surgery. If you qualify, you'll be chosen to receive either spinal fusion or an investigational artificial disc. So if you've been diagnosed with degenerative disc disease, suffer from neck and arm pain or associated symptoms, and are seriously considering surgery, call 800-334-3792 for more information. 800-334-3792. To see if you qualify for this neck and arm pain study, call 800-334-3792. Brought to you by Stryker Spine.
WRIF concert.
Roger Waters. The creative genius of Pink Floyd is coming tonight, and he's bringing the dark side of the moon with him.
Breathe, breathe in the air.
Roger Waters will bring the dark side of the moon to life on stage. The heart, the soul, and the music that speaks to us like no other album in the world. In addition to Dark Side of the Moon, Roger will perform other Pink Floyd classics along with his extraordinary solo work, creating an evening you will never forget. Roger Waters, the creative genius of Pink Floyd, is coming. Tonight, live at the Palace of Auburn Hills. Tickets on sale now at all Ticketmaster locations and PalaceNet.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, sir, for joining me. A pleasure to be with you. And also a pleasure to welcome someone back to the Peter Werby Show who I've interviewed before, who's a friend of mine and who is a colleague of mine in talk radio. It's Tom Hartman, nationally syndicated radio talk show host, best-selling author. He does mornings in Portland. Then he does another 3 hours of a nationally syndicated show heard on 80 radio stations across the U.S., draws some 3 million listeners every day. Unfortunately, not here in the Detroit area, but from Portland, Oregon, my pal, Tom Hartman. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Peter. It's great to be here with you.
We got to get you here in Detroit.
Oh, man. Detroit, my oldest daughter was born in Detroit. I grew up in Lansing. I mean, that's my old stomping ground.
Well, you've written 17 books. I can usually barely get through a copy of The Nation in a week. We talked about The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World, and What We Can Do About It Before It's Too Late. We talked with you about We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Also, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance, A Call to Take Back America. There's a theme here, and in Tom Hartman's brand new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, the subtitle is, And What We Can Do About It. Because don't you think, Tom, that a lot of people among liberals, on the left, among progressives, it simply and is only the cataloging of how badly we're getting screwed. But you've always got suggestions for how we can improve this all.
Yeah, for sure. You're right, Peter. There's no shortage of books that do actually a very good job, and I think, frankly, a very important job of chronicling the situation. Barbara Ehrenreich, for example, her book Nickel and Dimed, you know, where she goes out and tries to make a living as a minimum wage person. And then her follow-up book, where she goes out and tries to get a decent job as a white-collar worker. And, you know, they're truly horrifying glimpses into the future that awaits really most Americans, you know, almost all of us, it's, you know, most Americans are just a couple of paychecks away from a disaster or an illness away from a disaster. And, you know, it shouldn't be that way. It just shouldn't be that way.
Well, let's look at the subtitle, Love Screwed. I mean, that brings your mind to it right away. But the undeclared war against the middle class, explain undeclared war. Who's launched it and what are the consequences?
There's two groups. There's two groups. And the one group is the one that everybody kind of knows about. First of all, the undeclared war, it really, Reagan kicked this thing off in 1981 when he busted PATCO. I mean, that was the first shot across the bow. That was the shot heard around the world, or what, you know, whatever metaphor you want to use.
The air traffic controllers.
That's
when he broke the union, yeah.
That's right. And then he began transforming the Department of Labor from an agency that ever since 1935 had operated on behalf of labor and in the interests of labor into an agency that was essentially hostile to the interests of labor. And Bush's father carried that a little step farther, and then Clinton backed away from it a little bit. We had Robert Reich, as I recall, was the Secretary of Labor, who wasn't bad. But now we've got, you know, Bush installing people in there again who are aggressively and openly hostile to labor. In fact, his most recent appointment to that department was a lawyer who's built most of his career, most of his fortune, representing Walmart and breaking unions, or, you know, keeping unions out of Walmart. So there's, you know, there's that. That's the declaration of war, and it's not just against unions. I mean,
well, I was going to say, labor, some of our listeners, white-collar workers, will say, yeah, well, those blue-collar guys, the industrialization doesn't affect me, but it does, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it does. It's not, I mean, the war against labor is a symptom of the war against the middle class. And we all know of, as I said, where I started with this is we all kind of know about the corporatists, you know, the big companies. They want increased profit. The CEO needs a bigger salary. The stockholders want a bigger dividend. So, you know, they're sticking it to labor, or they're sticking it to the working people, blue collar, white collar, pink collar, whatever it may be, right across the board. But the group that most people don't know about, that isn't talked about by and large in the mainstream media, and in fact it's virtually never talked about in the mainstream media, it's not even usually talked about in the media of the quote left end quote, you know, like the Nation magazine or whatever, is that group of conservatives, and I use the word in the classical sense of the meaning, like going back to Sir Edmund Burke in the 1790s, the guy who the British conservative who argued against the American Revolution, and then after the Revolution argued that America would be a doomed experiment, who Thomas Paine went over and spent 2 weeks at his home in England and was so incensed by his conversations with Burke, their letters back and forth are still extant, and they're amazing, that Thomas Paine wrote an entire book called The Rights of Man just as a rebuttal to Burke.
Is that right? Is that
yeah.
where that comes from?
It's the entire book was a rebuttal to Burke. And in that book, Thomas Paine proposed Social Security. He proposed a graduated income tax. He proposed a minimum wage. He proposed maximum hour laws. He proposed unionization. I mean, he proposed virtually all of the major reforms that Franklin Roosevelt finally was able to put into place. And it's amazing how forward-looking Thomas Paine was in The Rights of Man. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. I wrote a review of it that about 6 months ago. It's over at BuzzFlash.com, in which that has huge chunks of the book excerpted and stuff from Burke in there. If any of your listeners want to get an, you know, kind of the Cliff Note version of it. But in any case, that conservative worldview that Burke had is the conservative worldview that is interested in there not being a middle class. And there's actually a very rational reason for it, and the people who are promoting it consider themselves lovers of America and patriots. And that's the reason why when we make them into cartoon characters or we vilify them, I think we do ourselves a disservice, because we have to really, you know, understand them and challenge them on the basis of their own argument. Burke said in 1790, in one of his letters to Paine, he said, you know, it does me no harm if a man is allowed to engage in a profession as servile as that of a hairdresser or a tallow maker, a candle maker. But it does society considerable violence if such a man is allowed to participate in the process of governance, in other words, to vote or to run for political office.
So this is economic aristocracy.
Yes, yeah. Burke believed, as most conservatives of the day did, including people like President John Adams, the first conservative president of the United States, which is why, you know, McCollum and all these guys are working so hard to reinvent him as a saint, even though he put 20 newspaper editors in prison and, you know, passed the first version of the Patriot Act and all that kind of stuff. They believe that society is most stable when it has, to quote Burke, classes and orders, and that those classes and orders in society need to be rigidly stratified and maintained by an economic structure that is pretty difficult to get past, to change. And the difference between the U.S. version of conservative aristocracy and the British version of conservative aristocracy is that the British version was that aristocracy was hereditary. I mean, they believed that there was something genetic about intelligence and nobility and the ability to govern and leadership competence and all these other things. And, yeah, I mean, they had to believe that in order to maintain kings for 1,000 years. And we rejected that. The American conservatives rejected that, people like John Adams and Alexander Hamilton. But they still believed in an aristocracy. They just thought it should be a meritocracy rather than somebody being a leader because their father was. They should be a leader because they were the smartest guy in the room. And so we, you know, the American conservatives adopted this kind of meritocracy, but they still believed that you had to keep the rabble on the outside. You have to give them enough democracy that they feel like they're included, but not so much that they can actually have a good, solid, strong say in how things are done, because then they'll screw everything up.
Tom Hartman's my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. We're talking about his brand new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. And it is BK Publishers. That's Barrett Kohler. And you can go to TomHartman.com. Any way you spell it, it gets there, right? Yeah. Well, wait a minute. What's wrong with a meritocracy, everybody must be asking? You don't want the reverse of that. I mean, it seems like we have the reverse of it now.
Well, that's the problem, is the philosophy, the original philosophy was, yes, let's have a meritocracy, but then the meritocracy becomes rigidified because we also want a stable social order with classes and orders, right? And so it starts out as a meritocracy, and it quickly simply becomes oligarchy. It becomes an aristocracy. And that's where we're at now. I mean, that's what modern American conservatives want to bring us, is basically, you know, rule by corporations and rule by the rich and rule by inherited wealth. It's really the way it got reinvented in America was as this kind of lineage was the result of Calvinism. I mean, you know, John Calvin had this notion that, you know, God blessed some people and cursed others, and the way that you knew who God blessed was by whether or not they were rich.
Yeah, the people rich. Yeah, the people that were going to go to heaven, they called them the elect, and by their good works ye shall know them. And I think everybody knows. Let me just, a meritocracy, obviously those with merit rise to the top and lead, and oligarchy, great words we don't hear too much anymore, the rule of a few, and one you didn't mention but goes back 100 years or so, a plutocracy,
yes.
The rule of the rich.
Yeah, and that's really, you know, somewhere between oligarchy and plutocracy is where we're at. You know, oligarchy is just generally not just a rule by the few, but a rule by a few families, you know, typically.
Sure.
And again, to give the devil his due, the conservatives who are promoting this think that this is the best thing for America, that it provides stability. And just stepping back and looking at the big picture, look at a 300-year sweep or a 250-year sweep on this thing. There have been two periods in the history of the United States when we had a strong middle class. Basically, from about 1830 until the Great Depression, there was no middle class. There was a very small middle class. It was basically mercantilists and some farmers could arguably be called middle class. But most of America was the working poor. I mean, you see DiCaprio's movie, The Gangs of New York, you read the books, you know, and the old Horatio Alger and whatnot. But there was a very few very wealthy people. There was a very small middle class of basically shop owners, the mercantilists. And then there was this large class of the working poor. But prior to the 1830s, back from around 1720 until roughly 1830, the revolutionary period in there, there was a middle class that was the result of basically killing off lots and lots of Native Americans and taking their land and bringing in slave labor. Well, that increase in wealth produced a middle class. And then the second middle class came about after 1935 because of Franklin Roosevelt saying, we're going to change the rules of the game of business so that, you know, we'd love it if you play business. We love it if you make money. Love it if you start businesses. But you have to do it in a way that's going to advance the middle class. And with the Wagner Act in 1935 and the Social Security Act and on it went. And what the conservatives look at is they say, okay, there's two periods of a middle class in America, the 1770s and the 1970s. What do these have in common? In both cases, that middle class got uppity. People started standing up and saying, hey, wait a minute, we're not going to listen to this king stuff anymore. We want our rights. We want a seat at the table. I mean, in 1773, the small business people went out and took out three British ships and threw the tea into the harbor in the winter of 1773 in Boston. In 1776, they started shooting back at the king, and they said, that's it, we're having a revolution. In 1973, they were in the streets. They were burning down the cities. There's women saying, hey, we want reproductive rights. And by the way, we'd like equal pay in the workplace. Yet African Americans saying, well, what we thought the slaves were freed. How come we're still living in the ghetto? And you had gays saying, hey, wait a minute, we're here. We're part of the family too. We're part of the human race, you know, and the conservatives looked at this in the 1770s and were horrified, saying, oh my God, you know, society, this is society in chaos, and they really fully expected that America would collapse. And in fact, when the Civil War happened, the conservatives of Europe were all going, see, told you so. And in the 1970s, the conservatives looked at our society, at the hippies and the free love and the women's movement and the Symbionese Liberation Army and the SDS and everything else. And they said, this is a society in decay. This is a society on the verge of collapse. And if something's not done, it's going to go down the tubes. And the conclusion that the thinking elite of the ruling cons came to in both cases was that this middle class has too much time on their hands. They've got a little too much money and a little too much time. If they're economically stable, if they don't, you know, worry that they might not get through college, get thrown out of one school, you can get into another. You know, college was, I mean, the University of California was free up until, you know, Reagan stopped that. And most colleges, I mean, I worked my way through school doing radio. My wife worked her way through college as a waitress in a Holiday Inn, in a Howard Johnson's. I mean, you can't do that today.
Now, Tom Hartman's, my guess, his book is Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. And flesh this out in terms of what, well, actually, I want to ask you, I love theory, because what you can do with theory is you can apply it to reality. You don't have to get buffaloed by what you read in the paper or see on television or hear on the radio every day. Immediately, like I'm sure, Tom Hartman, you do the same thing. You look like the front page of the Los Angeles or New York Times or the Washington Post, and all these stories converge, whether it's about the war, the economy, social movements, all of that. So, essentially, and this is an incredible perspective that you're giving us, that it's not solely about money, but it's also about rule. It's about power. It's about an assault on a class that can threaten both that the elite wields.
And for the best of reasons. I mean, if you were to have this conversation in absolute candor with Bill Kristol or with William F. Buckley Jr., or you know, with the thinkers anyway, you know, Paul Wolfowitz, Doug Feith, Richard Pearl, any of these guys, if they were willing to just tell you straight up, you know, the way that they were told by their teacher, Leo Strauss and others, this is the best thing in their mind for America because it's going to create a stable society. And we have now in the United States, we have become, in the last 2 years, we have become the most rigidified, in terms of class structure, society among all the developed industrialized democracies in the world. It's harder to get out of the working poor into the working class or the middle class. It's harder to get out of the middle class into the upper middle class. And it's harder to get from the middle class to the wealthy in the United States than even in the United Kingdom, where there's a hereditary upper class.
Now, give us, I mean, some people might be saying, well, I don't know. I just we're driving around some of these middle-class areas outside of Detroit, Sterling Heights or Birmingham or Royal Oak, some of the suburbs that you know, Tom Hartman, yeah. and they'd say, huh? I hear all this stuff on television. Looks all right to me. What are the gross statistics that support your contention that there's an undeclared war against the middle class?
Well, what we're seeing is that, first of all, it's not possible right now, or it's very difficult for people to move into higher education, for example, without ending up becoming an indentured servant. People are graduating basically from college now with $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $70,000, $100,000 in debt. That's the same as we had in the late 1800s when people came to the United States literally as indentured servants. You know, I'll give you 10 years of my life in exchange for boat passage and a job. And when you look at, you know, all these people in all these spiffy new cars driving down the street going to all these nice houses, what you are seeing is not wealth. In many cases, in fact, in most cases, what you are seeing is debt.
Sure.
And there's a big difference. You know, they may look the same on the outside, but there's a big difference. This is one of the things that Reagan understood, and that I don't actually know if Reagan himself understood it, but that the people who ran Reagan understood, certainly Greenspan understood, and that they used to manipulate the American people was, hey, let's give tax breaks to the wealthy. Let's give real wealth to the wealthy. Let's cut the top marginal tax rate from 70% when Reagan came into office down to 28%. And then that's going to throw the nation into debt, and so we're going to have to borrow money like crazy, but we'll lower interest rates so that people can, you know, continue to buy their houses and they continue to borrow their cars, and we'll loosen up credit and things like that. And so what we're going to do is throw the middle class and working people into greater and greater debt, increase their tax load, you know, the percentage of what they're paying in taxes, in a whole variety of ways, user's fees and sales taxes and property taxes in particular. And, there'll be a transfer of real wealth up the ladder. And there has been. It's a significant one.
I unkindly call it looting.
Yeah. But again, I mean, we're not talking about evil sociopaths. I mean, there are a few. There are a few. I mean, there are some people who are along for the ride and just making out like bandits, thank you very much. There are the Kenleys of the world, and most of them are in the business world. But the ideologues in this war, the ones who are really leading the battle, are doing it because they really believe that if you have a society where the rabble are a few paychecks away from being destitute and know it, then they won't speak out. They won't stir up trouble, and you're going to have a stable society, and people will know their place, and things will be just fine. Thank you very much.
Do you think people realize, because one of the facts that you relate in your book, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, is that there's actually been a drop in inflated adjusted median household income that has gone down in the last 4 years?
Yes.
I wonder if that's felt directly by people. I know the Republicans today said the biggest issue this election is going to be the economy. Are they all right? I mean,
well, yeah. In fact, last year was the first year, I believe, in the history of the United States. I may be wrong. It may have happened during the Great Depression, but I don't think so because debt was not widely available during the Great Depression. But last year was the first year, certainly in modern history, and since the 30s, that the average wage earner in the United States actually had negative savings. In other words, people spent 0.5% more than they earned. You go back 20 years ago, the tail end of the golden age of the American middle class, people were setting aside roughly 10% of their income, on average. Now, this last year, they took 0.5% of what they owned, their assets, and most of it was people using their houses as ATM machines. And, that's going to come back and bite a lot of people in the butt really hard if housing values continue to drop.
Well, Tom Hartman, I know, and I think that your perspective on why this is all occurring makes sense. On the other hand, we've been driven into debt by these people in the last 5 years. You know, there's that talking about 100 years ago, they used to, if you said something, they'd say, oh, if you're so smart, how come you're not rich? And I've always turned it on its head and said, if they're so rich, why aren't they a little smarter? I mean, we're talking about figures for the national debt that's up in the trillions, the debt and the deficit being in the billions. This is someone's going to have to pay all this, just like we have to pay our credit cards.
That's right. And before Reagan began really fundamental structural changes in the international order, and then George Herbert Walker Bush and then Bill Clinton really made the biggest changes with NAFTA and GATT and the WTO, and then, you know, George W. Bush following through with various treaties. Before that, it would have been unthinkable. You're right, and by and large wasn't done. I mean, there were people, you know, the robber barons who were basically, you know, out to get what they could get, but they weren't willing to screw their country in exchange for short-term gain. But now you have corporate decisions being made by corporations who have no loyalty to the United States. In fact, many of them have reincorporated in the Cayman Islands or other places simply so they don't have to pay U.S. taxes, like Kellogg Brown and Root, for example, at Halliburton. And so you have corporations making decisions that have nothing to do with the future of the United States. They figure, hey, if the United States goes down the tubes, we'll just move to China. China goes down the tubes, we'll just move to Germany. If Germany goes down the tubes, we'll just, you know, there's always going to be a country that we can go to and make some money at.
We're pledging allegiance, and they just think it's stuff for the rubes. I paced this interview terribly, Tom, because the most important subtitle of this is, and what we can do about it. And can you give me 60 seconds of how we're going to roll this all back?
I can, yeah. Peter, what brought about the second American middle class was Franklin Roosevelt passing laws that changed the rule of business. What has destroyed the second American middle class is Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and Bush passing laws that undid the American middle class. And what can save the American middle class is by passing laws, again, changing the rules of the game, that bring back the middle class. So the bottom line is we need to get politically active. We need to take control of one of the major political parties, and the Democratic Party seems like the logical one, at the grassroots level. Show up at your local county meetings, get involved. Let's take this party back, and let's you know, go back to the vision of Franklin Roosevelt. It actually does work. It's working right now in countries all across the world, particularly in Europe. It can be done.
Tom Hartman has 17 books out. He's got an 18th in the works. It's Walking as Meditation. I'm so up for that. We need a breather, but as you said, first we've got to take the country back. Tom Hartman is a best-selling author and Air America radio host. His website is tomhartman.com. The book, his radio work, his past books, his essays are all on there. It's an extraordinarily valuable website. And congratulations on this one, Tom Hartman. Thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Peter, it's always an honor and a pleasure to be on your show. You're a great guy. Thank you so much.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this. Another WRIF concert.
Roger Waters. The creative genius of Pink Floyd is coming tonight, and he's bringing the dark side of the moon with him.
Breathe in the air.
Roger Waters will bring the dark side of the moon to life on stage. The heart, the soul, and the music that speaks to us like no other album in the world. In addition to Dark Side of the Moon, Roger will perform other Pink Floyd classics along with his extraordinary solo work, creating an evening you will never forget. Roger Waters, the creative genius of Pink Floyd, is coming. Tonight, live at the Palace of Auburn Hills. Tickets on sale now at all Ticketmaster locations and palacenet.com.
The Mortgage Expert, 800-333-ROCK.
Hey, if you're currently in an adjustable rate mortgage, or if you're in one of those option arms, we got to listen up. I'm David Hall from Rock Financial, and we've got a new exclusive that you can only find with the Mortgage Experts, and we call it the Secure Advantage. It gives you flexible payment choices each month to properly manage your equity, but without prepayment penalties like your current option arm that you may have. That's right, no prepayment penalties, and this loan is locked until 2011. Call Rock Financial today to find out more. See how the Secure Advantage can cut your payment by up to 50% and increase your monthly cash flow. Check it out today. Call about the Secure Advantage.
It's time to leave.
A Quicken Loans Company, Equal Housing Lender.
Have you been thinking about changing your life by getting rid of your glasses or contact lenses? You owe it to yourself to call Dr. Tafor to find out everything you need to know about LASIK. Trusting your vision to a LASIK surgeon is one of the most important decisions you'll ever make. You'll want the best and most experienced LASIK surgeon offering the most advanced laser technology. Technology that's customized specifically for your vision. You want Dr. Tafor in the Windsor Laser Eye Institute. Only Dr. Tafor and the Windsor Laser Eye Institute stand behind their results for life by offering lifetime enhancements. Just think about how amazing it would be to begin each day by opening your eyes and seeing everything clearly without glasses or contacts. Take the first step and book your no-charge consultation with Dr. Tafor today. Call 1-800-663-IC. That's 1-800-663-ISEE. Or visit Dr. Tafor and the Windsor Laser Eye Institute online at WLEI.com. With the most experience, personalized treatment, and state-of-the-art technology, why would you trust your eyes to anyone else?
For a limited time, get a $77 Visa gift card free when you open a new checking account at TCF Bank. Certain restrictions apply. See TCF for details.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. If you've listened to this broadcast, the Peter Werby Show, over the years, you've heard me talk about what was called, and we'll get into why the was part of it, the School of the Americas. It's located in Columbus, Georgia at Fort Benning, and the School of America for decades has trained soldiers from other countries. Many of them going back and torturing and killing their own citizens. But there has been opposition right along. And also, if you've listened over the years, you may remember that I've interviewed before the founder of School of the Americas Watch. His name is Father Roy Bourgeois, and he is with us now from Columbus, Georgia, outside of Fort Benning. And it's a pleasure to have you back. Thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Good to be with you, Peter.
Now, we have told the story again, but we need to, some people are maybe scratching their heads, and it's not called School of the Americas anymore, but let me pose this to you in a different way. When we first began talking about this, most of the Latin American countries were run by very repressive governments, by torture states, by dictatorships. And now so many of them have become democratic countries and liberal countries, leftist countries. Is there still a problem with the School of the Americas? And in that, if you could give me a broad answer, including the history of the school and the opposition.
Okay, well, a few basics of the school. It's a combat school. It's been around since the 1940s. Was established in Panama in 1946, kicked out of Panama in 1984, and quietly settled at Fort Benning, Georgia, where it's operating full force today. It's trained over 60,000 soldiers from 18 countries in Latin America, most of them arriving from Colombia today, also a large number from Chile, El Salvador, Guatemala. The role of this school has been a simple one. It's been, as we see it and have researched, it's been about protecting U.S. economic interest in Latin America. It's been a long-time symbol of U.S. foreign policy in Latin America. It is kept, especially during the 60s, 70s, and 80s, a lot of the dictators in power during the days of Augusto Pinochet in Chile, Noriega, many other dictators around the hemisphere. Now, we learned about this school at Fort Benning shortly after six Jesuit priests, a young mother and her teenage daughter, were massacred in El Salvador. We were supporting the military in El Salvador for years. This massacre happened in 1989. A U.S. congressional task force investigated and reported that those responsible for the massacre were trained at the U.S. Army School of the Americas at Fort Benning, Georgia. That's when I and a small group came here. Having been in Latin America for 5 years, I'd worked as a Merino missionary in Bolivia for 5 years and saw firsthand the brutality of the military there. Now, what we found at this School of the Americas was a school, really, that was connected to untold suffering and death in Latin America. We started with a few people gathering at the main gate in November to keep alive the memory of the victims, to try and use our voices to close the school. And each year, the numbers would grow. This last November, over 19,000 gathered. Our movement has grown. Those who gathered, a large number, were high school and college students, a lot of military veterans. I was a veteran, military veteran, before becoming a Catholic priest. We had a lot of senior citizens, parents with their children. Our movement really is rooted in nonviolence, and what we are about, we're trying to close a school that continues to operate, all paid for by our tax money, about $20 million a year. And we believe that this school does not lead to democracy. It simply keeps the militaries of Latin America entrenched in power. And we see this school really as an obstacle to human rights and democracy in Latin America. And for this reason, we're working to close the school.
Well, Father Roy, I know when I was down there and attended the demonstration that you and the School of America's Watch organized at that time, the Columbus Daily Paper was actually pretty good. They for once, it's rare to see papers like that, gave both sides. And the commander of the School of the Americas said, first off, the name had changed. Secondly, that they had revamped all of their policies, that they no longer taught interrogations, and that they were trying to instill into the people that attended democratic values. So it was like SOA Watch had had an impact. And if what he said, essentially, the leopard had changed its spots.
Well, what happened, Peter, was this. As the movement grew, it became a public relations nightmare for the Pentagon. Again, a school that had been around for a long time that really protected the economic interests of our country and kept a wealthy elite in power in Latin America. What happened to major newspapers like the New York Times, the Washington Post, Boston Globe, Chicago Tribune, and other papers came out with editorials calling for its closure, especially after torture manuals were discovered as a part of the curriculum in the school. This made the front pages of papers like the Washington Post, New York Times. Then we had bills in Congress that were introduced to call for its closure. It actually won by 30 votes in the House. It lost in the Senate Conference Committee by one vote. The school was in trouble. It was going to be shut down forever. So what the Pentagon did was come up with a plan to change its name. And by a very close vote, we lost by 14 votes back in 2000, the name of the school was changed from the School of the Americas to the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. Now, we believe it's a new name, but the same shame, really. It's still about men with guns. There have been some cosmetic changes. They said to us that they're teaching democracy now. But I and many who have been in the military, we ask a couple of basic questions. The first, how do you teach democracy at an institution that's undemocratic? One thing we knew in the military was that it was not a democracy. Nor do you teach democracy from behind the barrel of a gun. We're learning that in Iraq. We know this to be true in Latin America. You do not teach democracy behind the barrel of a gun or at a major military installation. I'm looking out my window now. Welcome to Fort Benning. There's a double chain link fence topped with barbed wire. Reminds me of some maximum security prisons I've seen around the country. Signs that say no trespassing. This is not the place to be teaching democracy. What we believe, Peter, is that this school is living up to its role, and that is to keep the militaries of Latin America in power. And to the, this was proven. We just got back a delegation from our movement, went to Peru and Chile and Ecuador. And we found this to be very true in Chile and Peru. The military there still very entrenched, while there are democratically elected government officials now. The military there in many ways still run the country. And this is an obstacle, we feel, to democracy, this school that we're trying to shut down.
My guest on the Peter Werbe Show is Roy Bourgeois, founder of the School of the Americas Watch. You can go to SOAW.org, SOAW.org, and Father Roy will be in Detroit, and he's going to be speaking Wednesday, September 20th, 5 p.m. at the Ruther Library on the Wayne State University campus. That's on Cass Avenue, just north of Warren. And it's sponsored by the ACLU and the UAW supporters of SOAW. Now, I know Bob King, who I know personally, a wonderful man. He's on the international board of the UAW, and he leads a delegation of UAW members to Fort Benning every year in November, and I'm sure he's planning to do that this year as well. Tell me a little about the relationship with the United Auto Workers. Is this something that the UAW people just do outside of your connection with them?
Well, they connected the United Auto Workers and other labor unions, the AFL-CIO. They, you know, all passed a resolution calling for the closing of the school, along with Amnesty International and many other groups, including many religious organizations and church groups. The reason the United Auto Workers came on board is because in a country like Colombia, where most of the soldiers are being trained from, in this country, Colombia, there are more union workers killed in Colombia than any other country in the world, according to the New York Times and other press releases. It's the most dangerous place to organize labor, to call for just wages, to try to organize a union. And, of course, what Bob King and the United Auto Workers are trying to do is express their support and solidarity with the workers of Colombia, who are really the victims of the training that's going on at this school. I'm happy to say, too, that the ACLU came on board back in the year 2000, 2001. Actually, it was after 9/11 that they refused to give us a permit to meet. They said that we were now at war with terrorism and this was no time to be protesting. The ACLU came to our defense on First Amendment grounds, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and we went through the court system here. And, of course, the federal judge ruled that we had every right to continue to gather, as we've done for the last 12 years. And he said our march will go on. And then they tried to use these metal detectors that caused a lot of problems as thousands gathered here. And the ACLU won that decision in a federal court. So let me just say we have a lot of national, international groups in our movement, religious groups such as the Presbyterian Church USA, over half of U.S. Catholic bishops, United Church of Christ, and many other organizations who are working with us to close the school that we see causing suffering and death in our name. It's being financed, once again, by our taxes. Let me say, Peter, I just came back from a delegation. We actually, over the last few months, first 5 months ago, we went to Bolivia, one of the poorest countries in Latin America, Argentina, and Uruguay. We were able to meet with human rights leaders and government leaders there. We met with the president of Bolivia, who said to us in the meeting that he would be pulling out the troops gradually from this school over the next year. In Argentina and Uruguay, we met with their defense ministers, and they made an announcement while we were still in country that they actually have pulled out all of their soldiers from this school, along with Venezuela.
Really?
Now, we now have Venezuela, Argentina, and Uruguay who have pulled out their troops from this school. And this, of course, has energized our movement, a school that does not have students cannot operate. For this reason, we just returned our delegation of four. Among our delegation was Carlos Mauricio, survivor of torture from El Salvador. Lisa Sullivan, who has worked in Latin America for 20 years, and Linda Panetta, who's also a photojournalist. But we just returned from Chile, Peru, and Ecuador. Let me say, in every country that we visit in Latin America, what you notice when you are there is the poverty. The vast majority of the people are struggling for survival. So many of their people live in shacks. They don't have schools. They don't have medical care. And what I want to say is that this school, this combat school at Fort Benning that we're pumping millions into, really is a theft from sisters and brothers in these countries who are struggling for survival. These people, the majority of these countries who are struggling for a better way of life, for food for the table, for just wages, for hospitals, schools for their kids, they don't need a combat school. They don't need a school where their soldiers are sent, who really are an obstacle to democracy in their countries. And this is one of the big issues I want to bring up because, again, it's being done in our name, and we want this school shut down.
Well, I should say, and before we get too far away from this, I was thinking that Bob King of the International UAW Board brings a delegation down to Fort Benning every November. We'll be doing so again, and I was wondering what I know from messages I've received that there's UAW members listening and people from other unions. If you don't know how to hook up with these people and you'd like to go down as part of a delegation, you can email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and I will hook you up with those people. You know, we've talked any number of times, and I've heard you speak in person at Fort Benning when I was down there in 2001. And to these Midwestern ears, I thought, an Irish priest. but I've just been reading more about you, and you're from Louisiana.
Yes, Raging Cajun from the bayous of Louisiana.
And you served during the Vietnam era, did you?
Yeah, like most folks, came up, very patriotic and hardworking family in a little town of 3,000 outside of New Orleans. Went off to the state university, got a degree in geology, hoping to get rich in the oil fields of South America. When I left college years ago, Vietnam was on, and I wanted to serve my country. And became a naval officer and spent the next 4 years in the military, where it was my ticket out of Louisiana. And it was after a couple years aboard ship, a year at a NATO station in Europe, I volunteered for shore duty in Vietnam, Peter. I believed in the cause, that it was noble. The enemy back then was communism. And I went off to Vietnam, as many did. And that was a turning point in my life. Let me say that I've come to believe that the greatest enemy in our country today is ignorance. We don't know very much about our U.S. foreign policy and what it's doing to people of other countries, the suffering and death that it often causes. We know very little about their culture, their histories, unlike our own. I mean, people are struggling for survival in so many countries. And let me just say, they do not see us as we see ourselves. And I learned that in Vietnam. I mean, we were the invaders. And losing friends there, wounded in Vietnam, and death was very close, I was losing my hope. I lost this joy that I had in my life, and I wanted to recapture it, rediscover it. I met a missionary there, a Catholic priest, who led me to Marino, a group that works in 25 countries around the world trying to be peacemakers, trying to heal the suffering of others. And when I left Vietnam, my 4 years in the military had come to an end, and I entered the seminary and became a Catholic priest. And after 6 years of studies, Marino assigned me to their missions in Bolivia, where the poor of La Paz, Bolivia, a slum on the outskirts of La Paz, the poor became my teachers. And they taught me about my country's foreign policy there. They taught me about the School of the Americas that we knew so little about. It taught me about, you know, what this dictator was doing, a dictator, General Hugo Banzer, that my country supported. And let me say it was in my fifth year when I was very, very happy there in Bolivia, serving the poor, working on health and educational projects, building a school, a clinic. It was in my fifth year that I was arrested with many for speaking out against the repression of the dictatorship. And I came home, and not long after returning to the U.S., I discovered with others this military, this combat school in our backyard at Fort Benning that really was training all of these thousands of soldiers, about 1,000 a year, from Bolivia and other countries in Latin America, Central America. And that's for the last 15 years, really, my focus has been, with many others, trying to shut down this school that we see connected, again, to all of this suffering and death and oppression in Latin America.
Well, this November, as usual, there's going to be a School of the Americas Watch demonstration, rallies, educational sessions, music. Remember when I was there, it was a big life-size puppet show that was incredible. It's going to be November 17th to the 19th, and it's going to converge at the gates of Fort Benning, Georgia. And the call is to close the SOA, the School of the Americas, and change oppressive U.S. foreign policy. And I wonder, because one of the things that was so moving to me was, I see this on the cover of the biography of you, Disturbing the Peace, the story of Father Roy Bourgeois and the movement to close the School of the Americas, which I will put a link on my site. And you're holding a cross, but it has a country name and a person's name on it. Could you tell us the symbology of that? That was extraordinarily moving to me.
Well, the name on the cross that I'm carrying is Ida Ford. She was a Marinol sister. Went to El Salvador with another Marino nun, Maura Clark. They went there at the invitation of Archbishop Oscar Romero in El Salvador to work with the poor. And it was in 1980, December the 2nd, that four churchwomen from our country, including the two Marino sisters, Maura and Ida, they were raped and killed by the Salvadoran military. And we learned later that those who raped and killed them were trained at the School of the Americas. Now, that, of course, made it rather personal, brought it closer to home. But let me just say, when we gather, Peter, for our big protest, actually it's a big celebration of hope. When over 19,000 gathered last year, many held these, we have on Sunday what we call our solemn funeral procession. We carry these white crosses bearing the names of the victims. Many have their photographs. We have a procession, and individually the names are called out. And after each name, the thousands in unison would say, "Presente." This person is present with us today. And, of course, the church women are remembered along with all the other victims, people like Archbishop Romero, who was assassinated by graduates of the school while he was in this church, celebrated Mass. The six Jesuits are remembered, the young mother and her 15-year-old daughter, Selena, and many others in other countries. These folks have become real inspirations in our lives. They're real people who had families, loved ones, who continue to grieve for them. And one of the big issues is that we will not forget. In all of these countries, they have on certain occasions times to keep the memories alive. And November this year, it's going to be November the 18th and 19th, our next huge protest here. And I invite our listeners to consider coming down to join us. We are going to keep alive the memory of the tens of thousands of sisters and brothers in Latin America who really have been the victims of this school and this training. And what we need now are more voices in the movement. I mean, so many groups have entered the movement now, and they give us a lot of hope. Of course, Bob King, the United Auto Workers, the many friends from ACLU, and all of these different organizations. I'm reminded of Bishop Oscar Romero. He said before he was assassinated that we can all do something for peace, and we can do it well. He said we all have a voice, and we should use our voices for peace and for the many who have been killed because of violence. And that's where we come in. I do believe that we have a voice, and I'm very, very encouraged. I see a lot of hope because more and more people in our country and actually in Latin America who know this school very well, but our movement is growing. There are more and more voices coming into the movement, and I do believe that one day, before too long, we're gonna close this school.
Well, as I said a couple of times, I was down there in 2001, and even before we spoke, I was talking to friends and saying we have to go back down there. And the point in the procession where the names of the murdered are mentioned and the presente comes up from the crowd, I remember breaking into tears at one point, and actually kind of feel them almost at the surface of my eyelids right now. I don't know if this is something my listeners want to hear, but it's an extraordinary, moving event, and people taking history into our hands and not watching it on television, but actually being part of it. So anyone that can get down there, I would highly recommend. There's organized groups going. More information at SOAW.org. SOAW.org. Father Roy Bourgeois will be in Detroit Wednesday, September 20th. It's going to be at 5 p.m. at the Walter Reuther Library on the Wayne State University campus. And that's on Cass Avenue, just north of Warren. And as I said earlier, if people want to hook up with the delegations going down there or more information about this event, you can reach me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com or more on my website, peterwerby.com. Father Roy, as always, very inspirational to speak with you. Thanks for joining me.
Good to be with you again, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
There are a lot of health plans in Wayne County, but only one goes the extra mile for employers and workers alike. Health Choice of Michigan, the limited health benefit program that works for small business. With Health Choice of Michigan, your workers and their family members get access to preventive and routine care, urgent and emergency care, hospital care, diagnostic testing, pharmacy services, dental and vision screenings, and a vast network of doctors. Health Choice of Michigan offers the quality health care you need at an affordable cost. So get Health Choice of Michigan, the health plan with everything you need to keep your workers healthy and your small business in business. Health Choice of Michigan, the health program that works hard for small business owners. Call 1-800-WELL-NOW for quality health care today. That's 1-800-WELL-NOW for Health Choice of Michigan.
Jeff, I'm going to have you do some word associations.
Okay, Doc.
Now, when I say a word, I want you to tell me the first thing you think of. Ready?
Yeah.
Kittens.
Scratches.
Balloons.
Clowns. Scary clowns.
Okay. How about banking?
Ooh, rewards.
Writing checks.
Digital camera.
Check card.
Cashback.
Online bill pay.
Gift cards.
Interesting.
What is it, Doc? What do I have?
I don't know, but I want it.
Introducing Chase Flexible Rewards. Now you'll associate your everyday banking with great rewards. When you write checks, make purchases with your Chase check card, pay bills online, or make deposits, you can earn points to use any way you want. Get vacations, gift cards, and even cash back. Get Chase Flexible Rewards. Enrolling is free, fast, and easy. Talk to a banker today. Your choice, your Chase.
Available with qualifying account packages. See a bank for terms and conditions and program details. Deposit products are provided by JPMorgan Chase Bank, any member of PNC.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual when he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it?
I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program then helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185. Call now. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185.
For a limited time, get a $77 Visa gift card free when you open a new checking account at TCF Bank. Certain restrictions apply. See TCF for details.
In the Motor City.
You're rocking with Jay Hudson.
Jay Hudson.
Jay Hudson, I love you.
Hello, Jay Hudson.
You're listening to Jay Hudson.
Jay Hudson.
What's up, Motor City?
I need to hear that, man.
One badass mother.
There is none higher.
Straight out of Detroit, baby.
Mr. Jay Hudson.
You're my boy.
Partying with Jay Hudson.
Oh, that sounds so sweet.
I'm calling the shots.
This is a nightmare.
Yo!
You're rocking out with Jay Hudson.
Well, Lordy freaking God!
101 WRIF Detroit. Everything that rocks.